Blog Talk Radio.
Yakuza! Yakuza! Yakuza Kick Radio!
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 This is the Bulldozer, Matt Tremont. And if there's one place to listen to on the internet, every Thursday, 9 p.m., Yakuza Kick Radio. Tremont says so. Who wants some?
God help us, Jesus! God and baby, Jesus! Help us.
Ladies and gentlemen of fucking America, this is Danny Havoc, and you have been listening to, or possibly are intending to listen to, the Yakuza Kick fucking radio. Fucking, yeah! Yakuza Kick radio.
Hell fucking yeah!
My name is Justice Payne, and you are listening to Yakuza Kick Radio.
You're coming to come on Thursday night in Alabama.
This is a brotherhood, and we all stick together. Like my nuts.
I ain't scared of you, motherfucker.
Yakuza Kick Radio, the best in internet wrestling radio, period, bar none, just like Adam Cole.
Everybody's a cunt but me in the world. I don't know what it is.
But you go to the back, and you tell your boss that there's a new Yakuza in town. And it's Yakuza Kick Radio, and we're taking over.
Yakuza Kick Radio has risen from the ashes of bad internet radio and become the premier place for any independent professional wrestler to stop and record their voice.
The shit is bananas.
Well, this is Mr. Insanity, Toby Klein, and if you're not listening to Yakuza Kick Radio, then you're weird.
Oh, I don't like the cut of your jib, fella.
This is Greg Excellent, Bearded Dragon of the Northeast. You're listening to Yakuza Kick Radio. If you're not, probably watching porn and you have this muted. You should be listening to it, Jason Mann.
Where are Biggie and Tupac?
Yakuza Kick Radio.
Give a nigga rope one of those cowboy guys.
All you have to do is listen to Yakuza Kick Radio, but you shouldn't. Now look at that doc, you homie. Fuck that. Black D. Holla.
Bullshit, man. Motherfucker. Fuck you. Fuck you and fuck you.
Who's next? And now, ladies and gentlemen, for the introduction.
Hosted by J. Cat Morris.
You are now listening to Yakuza Kick Radio.
It is Wednesday, October 10th, 2012. Welcome to Yakuza Kick Radio. I'm your host, J. Cat Morris, as always. And I think I have a pretty interesting show for you guys. I know I've kept everybody in the dark because I told everybody I had a secret guest tonight. And I wasn't going to tell anybody, and I have my reasonings behind that. But might as well just let you have it just like this. Without further ado, I present you with the one and only Ian fucking Rotten.
What's up, Jay?
Hey, what's going on, Ian?
Just watching my Orioles spank the Spankies.
Yeah. Not a huge baseball fan, but if anything, I don't like the Yankees, so. Well, you know, I got to start off by thanking you for coming on. I know you must be, you know, skeptical to do these type of things after the last debacle, so.
Yeah, I'm like I said to you, you know, I talked to quite a few of the boys that, you know, say you're an up-and-up guy. So, you know, let's have at it.
All right. Cool stuff. Well, I mean, the first time I actually saw you, I had tons of stuff to ask you, and I'm terrible with chronological, so I'm just all over the place. But the first time I actually saw you and stuff was the ECW days, you know, with the Bad Breed and stuff. How'd you get into ECW and that whole thing?
You know, us getting in the ECW was actually, you know, me and Axel running shows, and you know, Axel had his little stint in WCW with his big feud with PN News, and you know, of course, being Axel's trainee, you know, I, whenever he was around, you know, the East Coast and stuff, I, you know, carry his bag in the building and all that stuff, you know, then. You know, I met Paul E. and at the WCW shows, and when we were running shows, you know, I was like, you know, be, you know, awesome, cool if, you know, we could have, have you come in, and you know, he agreed to it, and came in, and you know, I was like, you know, you think maybe we could get Eddie Gilbert's phone number and try to get into ECW? And he was like, well, Eddie's kind of on his way out, and you know, somebody's taking over that that likes you. I'm pretty sure, you know, you'll get some work. You know, of course, he was very vague about it because, you know, he was the one, you know, stabbing supposedly one of his best friends in the back to take his job from him.
Right.
So, you know, we had, you know, some shows coming up and stuff, and you know, Paulie told us to come up to the arena and meet Todd and things like that. And, of course, something happened, you know. And like every good young wrestler in the business, you take your bag to every show. And, you know, I wound up teaming with Jason Knight because Axel's back was messed up from the show the night before. So instead of being me and Axel, it was me and Jason Knight against a debut on Public Enemy. And, you know, the rest of it's kind of history from there, you know.
Yeah, definitely. And you guys had your run there. I had heard different things, you know, from different interviews and different things that have been said, but there was supposedly something that went down where you guys were up for like a number one contender thing, but then it was misunderstood. Or,
oh, you know. Yeah, that's actually really a funny story. Teddy and Johnny were driving to the show with Paul E. And Teddy said to him, you know, Well, who's up tonight? And Paulie said, because at this time I think Mikey and Cactus had the belts. I think. I know Public Enemy didn't have them because, you know, it, like you said, it was a number one contenders thing.
Right.
And they were driving to the show, and Teddy said, you know, well, who's up tonight? And you know, Paulie was being sarcastic. He was like, the Bad Breed. You know, but, you know, Teddy didn't take it as a joke, but, you know, considering the fact that, you know, we never beat Public Enemy except for, like, at one of Todd Gordon's charity shows that he did for, I think it was a Crippled Children charity, you know, never beat Public Enemy. So,
right.
To Paul Lee, it was a joke, but he didn't make himself clear to Teddy, and Teddy didn't understand that it was a joke. So when we went over with the finish that night, Teddy was like, you guys are up. So
yeah.
We went over, and, you know, you could hear, you know, Bob saying, and the number one contender is the Bad Breed. And you can hear Paulie behind the curtain. What? So,
oh, wow.
His sarcasm kind of backfired on him a little bit there. But yeah, you know, it was so funny because Teddy was like, you said they were up.
That's funny. And I just looked it up real quick. I think you went on to go against the Pitbulls.
Okay. So
I think they're holding. Yeah.
I've been hitting the head quite a bit, so.
Never heard that. So, I mean, was that, you know, was there heat behind that, or was it just kind of like a,
oh,
you know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, Axel got beyond pissed. Axel's like, oh, so we're a fucking joke, you know? Is that what the case is? You know, Axel and Paulie butted heads in the beginning more than me and Paulie butted heads, you know?
Right.
I was kind of the peacemaker in several of the situations. You know, because, you know, I would sit on the phone for hours with Paulie and just talk wrestling, you know.
Right.
For one, you know, I was a big Eddie Gilbert mark, you know, big Florida Championship Wrestling fan, and, you know, and the old Continental days with Eddie Gilbert booking, you know. So we would just sit back and talk about those territories and stuff. And, you know, so at first, you know, got along, you know, fantastic, because, you know, at that point, you know, I didn't have a family, you know, none of that stuff. So, you know, if he handed me $35-$40, you know, I was living in Baltimore, I didn't give a shit, you know.
Yeah.
You know, and then, you know, but, you know, him and Axel would direction of the company and, you know, things like that, you know. One time there was a problem with, you know, we were contending with the Public Enemy for the tag titles, and Axel had a problem with the way we had to go over on Stetson and Hot Body, and you know, that was a big brouhaha, you know.
Yeah.
But you know, I always let, at that point in time, I always let Axel handle the team's business anyway, because he was my trainer, and that was the right thing to do, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I never even really knew what our money was or any of that, because, you know, it was you know, left up to Axel to handle, because, you know, he was my trainer, you know.
Right.
He knew better than me, and, you know, and I left it up to that. So, yeah, in the beginning, they butted heads quite a bit.
Yeah. Then, you know, after the whole tag team thing, they pretty much turned you guys and, you know, had you guys feud in, come, you know, February, April, and you had hair versus hair, and then you had the barbed wire bat match, and, you know, just continued to escalate and stuff. And I think the Taipei was the last one. And when I think, I guess, stuff kind of boiled over, you know, what exactly led to that was just the same thing. Like it,
well, I mean, it was, you know, we found out from Jeff Jones we were doing the barbed wire bat match. Like,
mm-hmm.
We weren't asked to do it or anything like that. It was, you know, the judge, Jeff Jones, you know, calling us and saying, guess what you guys are doing this week? I just found on TV, you know.
Oh, wow.
And we were like, what? You know, which, you know, I didn't mind doing it, because back when we were doing the brawl game matches with Teddy and Johnny, you know, I said, you know, for the blow off of this, we should do like dueling barbed wire bats, you know, and Teddy and Johnny were like, you know,
yeah.
So, you know, I didn't mind doing it, but, you know, I would have kind of preferred to been asked if, you know, I wanted to do it, you know, and, so we came to agreement as far as, you know, what money was supposed to be when, you know, we were doing the barbed wire bats and stuff, and, you know, rarely, if ever, you know, the money was right, you know. But, you know,
right.
Me and Axel both knew that the match was box office for Paulie, because, you know, it's Philadelphia, it's ECW fans, you know.
Yeah.
They want to see somebody maim somebody, you know. And when we looked into those, to the Japanese style matches, you know, from either FMW or IWA Japan and stuff, we thought the barbed wire bat matches sucked, you know?
Right.
So we were like, they hardly used the bat, you know, and everything else. And so, you know, we were going out there and, you know, cutting each other to shreds with it, you know. Of course, the infamous part of the first barbed wire bat match is when I stuck the bat in Axel's leg, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I'll never forget, no matter how many times I get in the head or, you know, how much weed I smoke, coming back from that first barbed wire bat match, and Terry Funk going, you stupid fucking idiots, you're not supposed to hit each other with the bat that much. You know, so,
yeah.
You know, it's and then he's like, but besides that, that was a hell of a match, you know, so,
yeah.
Excuse me. Yeah, but, you know, it's kind of weird, you know, down the line of it, you know, I had guys like Benoit and Cactus and, you know, and guys of that nature, even Dean Malenko, you know, saying to Paulie, you know, I hope you're taking care of these guys, they're killing each other for, you know, and stuff,
right,
for
yeah.
each other, for you, you know, they're killing each other for you, and, you know, it just really came down to a feeling of, you know, in the end, you know, the night I quit, I was wrestling, you know, Bull Payne, and, you know, we
mm-hmm.
were doing, you know, barbed wire bats and all that stuff, you know, and, you know, that Big Apple Dinner Theater and things, you know, and it just came right down to it that I felt that, you know, until I stood up for myself, you know, Paulie was going to continue to fuck me as often as he could, and you know, that led to a, you know, a huge blow up, you know.
Right.
So you know, it was a shame because, you know, I ate, slept, and breathed ECW. You know, I knew what it was going to be. You know,
mm-hmm.
You know, I've been a wrestling fan since I was 4 years old. I knew it was the hardest working crew on the planet. You know, I truly feel to this day, you know, even after the so-called rise of ECW, none of the crews that Paulie had even came close to touching the crews from 93 to 95, you know.
Yeah.
Whatsoever, you know, didn't even come close. So,
yeah, a lot of what wrestling evolved into, as far as just even the TV product, came from that locker room. So,
absolutely, and, you know, and you know, for when Todd Gordon was running with Johnny Cashmere doing that
PWU,
yeah, I couldn't think of it, you know. He said, Todd asked me one night after the show, he's like, Ian, how old are you? And I told him, and he was like, no. And I was like, yeah. And he's like, no, you got to be much older than that. I was like, Todd, I was 23 years old in ECW. You know, you know, when I left ECW, I was 25, you know. You know, it was an incredible experience to be around, you know, guys like Terry Funk and Cactus Jack and Kevin Sullivan and, you know, Paulie himself, and, you know, just so many great talkers and thinkers, and, you know, the experience of Terry Funk making us, you know, Funk's Few Good Men, you know, where, you know, I would get to sit there and intently listen to, you know, Terry, Shane, and Sabu go over to three-way dance, you know, and stuff like that. And just think of, you know, as a young kid, so many things of, oh, I would have never thought of that. I would have never thought of that, you know.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it really helped establish me early on as, you know, a student of the game, because I got to be a part of that locker room, you know, which was absolutely incredible, you know.
Right. So, yeah, I mean, when you left there, you know, I guess it was a little bit of time passed, but something, you know, sparked you to want to start your own thing. And, I mean, even coming off ECW, them doing what they were doing with you and the hardcore and all that stuff, I mean, first, what, you know, sparked you to want to do it yourself, and how hard was it to bring that style of wrestling to somewhere that I don't think really had that much of it, to that extent at least?
Well, no, I mean, you know, Memphis wrestling was Memphis wrestling, but, you know, it was definitely a rough physical, you know, style of wrestling also, as far as, you know, the contact and the physicality of the wrestling. You know, I would put it right on par, you know, but a little bit behind as far as, like, Texas. You know, when me and Axel were in Global, you know, That was some of the stiffest, you know, style of wrestling that I ever been part of.
Right.
You know, so that was kind of a style I liked. But the problem was, Memphis had become complacent in itself of what they were doing. You know, they were drawing less and less. You know, they'd have six matches on a card and five matches would have a schoolboy finish. You know, so living out here, you know, I had started a hotline, you know, just basically, you know, giving wrestling news and interviews and stuff like that. And every Tuesday night, man, my voice box would fill up with people, you know, I'm so tired of paying for this shit, you know. You know, and so I decided to, you know, run a couple shows here and there, and you know, we had some really bad luck. Like, you know, the East Coast, it snows, you know, a foot of snow. It's not really that big of a deal. It snows a foot of snow here, Louisville shuts down. You know, you know, we had like 16 inches of snow on one of the shows. Actually, it was a really hard thing to get started. Well, then a friend of mine told me that that would go on to be my ring announcer and best man at my wedding, Rico Beatty, better known as the most drunk ring announcer ever in wrestling. but he let me know that the people where Danny Davis was running shows, which was the old Kmart building, weren't happy with what they were making out of it because their deal was, you know, no rent, but they got concessions and right. beer. So they weren't happy, you know, with what they were making because Danny wasn't drawing. So, I went out there and, you know, shot him a deal saying, hey, well, you know, I'll take concessions, but I'll pay you rent and I'll give you, you know, part of the beer sales, but I want to take part of that beer sales. You know, and I explained to him that, you know, I was young, I was hungry, you know, Danny was complacent in you know, what he was doing also, and, you know, really didn't care. And, you know, they went for it. So then we started, you know, October 10th, this day in wrestling history, now that I kind of think about it, 1996, we started running weekly shows at the old Kmart building. And, you know, first show, you know, I had Flyboy Rocco Rock and 911 on the show. And, you know, we drew 99 people. And, you know, by Thanksgiving, you know, we had over 300 people in the building running weekly. And right. by then I had taken Doug Gilbert and Tommy Rich from USWA. And, you know, that was a big coup. You know, I remember Bill Watts talking about, you know, how when Vince came into his territory and, you know, took Million Dollar Man and, you know, all the other guys that he took, Hacksaw right. Jim Duggan and, you know, stuff like that, that was a big blow to him. So, you know, I thought, you know, if I could take a couple of Lawler's top stars, you know, pay him more money and everything else, that, you know, I could do something. And, you know, of course we did. And, you know, but so the ending factor in what I wanted to do and why I wanted to do it was because I felt that there was a niche for it. I thought there was a time for it. I mean, we had every Tuesday night, you know, people saying, oh, I would love to see some of that ECW shit, you know. Yeah. Because, you know, at the time, they were only seeing it in the magazines, you know. And unless, you know, you were a tape trader or anything like that, and which a lot of folks in Kentucky ain't, you know.
Right.
You weren't seeing that. So when me and Ponda were doing barbed wire and thumbtacks and glass and, you know, we had Kickboxer and Tarek flying all over the place doing the luchador stuff, and
right.
we had three or four matches, you know, a card, you know, bleeding all over the place, and, you know, of course I had the Headbangers in, you know, we had really good talent and a good locker room that was working really hard. You know,
right.
along with, you know, Doug and Tommy and stuff like that. So they got what they wanted to see from USWA, and plus got to see the ECW stuff, you know, and which, you know,
right.
Doug Gilbert, you know, was no stranger to the FMW, you know, IWA Japan, you know, style stuff. So, you know, as long as he was paid a little bit more, you know, he was more than happy to get into things and, you know, Tommy Rich was never opposed to, you know, bleeding all over the place, you know.
Right.
So, you know, that's what the people wanted to see. The people wanted to see, you know, something that they could believe in, you know, other than, you know, same old predictable shit, you know, every
right.
Tuesday night.
Now, I mean, obviously, you know, this is something that happened, you know, much more throughout the years. But, like, how soon after you started and, you know, you were taking some of this talent from other companies and then obviously being somewhat of a rival or another brand in the same territory, you know, how soon was it before you started catching heat for the you know, the barbed wire, the thumbtacks, running something called King of the Deathmatch and, you know.
Oh, yeah. I mean, well, right away, you know, pretty much, you know.
Yeah.
You know, King of the Deathmatch came in October of 97, and by that time, mm-hmm. the Athletic Commission was already over us. So,
right.
You know, and it literally stood from, you know, Lawler telling the Athletic Commission, you know, we were bad for the wrestling business and, you know, we were corrupting children, you know, and everything else.
Yeah.
You know, I fought back with, you know, taking Lawler's mugshot and putting it on a T-shirt with Little Girls Beware on it, you know, from you know, when he got arrested for the you know, statutory rape charge, mm-hmm. you know, and stuff. And, you know, I mean, I was out there shooting on, you know, Lawler's character, you know, every show. And,
mm-hmm.
You know, we had commission up our ass every show after that, to the point that, you know, they took away everything they could from us, you know, and then wanted to know where their tax money was when, you know, nobody wanted to come to the shows. You know, so,
right.
Yeah, Lawler, you know, Jared Promotions and Randy Hales, you know, and another reason that the heat really started is because, you know, I'd go down to the Louisville Gardens because I'd run on Thursday nights and they ran on Tuesday nights, and I would go down to the Louisville Gardens and flyer all the cars, you know.
Right.
And I'd put a flyer out that says, want to know where Doug Gilbert's at? Want to know where Tommy Rich is at? Want to know where Dutch Mantel's at? Wanna, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, you know, so that worked out real well for us, and you know it. But it was funny because me and Lawler had some serious heat for a long time up until I went to a car convention with Jim Fannin, one of the national sports car conventions up in Cleveland, and he mm-hmm. was signing autographs, and you know, I'm really big into collecting, you know, the wrestling memorabilia and stuff like that. I bought mm-hmm. an original photo of Lawler pile driving Andy Kaufman off of one of
oh,
the
wow.
side photographers that was actually at, you know, the Mid-South Coliseum match, a guy named Scott Romer, and who is probably, as far as I'm concerned, the best wrestling photographer ever. And,
right.
You know, but I got a great, you know, black and white picture of Lawler pile driving Kaufman, and, you know, so I took it up to him, you know, with my hat pulled down over my scar tissue on my forehead, and, you know, was just hoping he was going to sign it and I was going to get out of there. And, you know, Lawler's like looking at the picture going, man, this is a great picture. I would love to have this for myself, and, you know, and,
mm-hmm.
And stuff like that. He's like, it's on this great old paper. And, you know, I was like, well, it's an original photograph from the match. And he was like, where did you get this from? And I told him, and you know, he still hasn't even looked up at me. He's looking at the photo. And I was like, are you even going to look up and see who you're putting over? And, like, he looks at me, and he goes, do I know you? And I lifted up my hat and showed my scar tissue, and he goes, Ian Rotten, how the hell are you doing? And I was like, just fine, Kingfish. And he was like, where did you get this picture again? So, you know, I had hooked him up with Scott Romer to, you know, to get some of those photos and stuff. And funny short side of that story is a little later on, he was coming to one of the Gathering of the Juggalos and knew I was going to be there and brought me a cast-only photo from the Man in the Moon movie. So... I thought that was really cool of him, and he was pretty much buried, you know, that weekend. You know, he was like, I'm too old to have heat with people. So,
that's good.
But, you know, it was definitely, unique experience as far as I was concerned, because, you know, I just did everything I heard from others. You know, as far as, you know, the taking the talent and you know, all that stuff. Because eventually we took PG-13, you know,
mm-hmm.
we took everybody from them. That was anybody that I would want, we took from them, you know.
Right.
Because the guys were like, you know, oh, you know, why should you, you know, wrestle around a circuit and make this amount of money when you can wrestle for EM one night and, you know, make that money and then still do other indies, you know, because, you know, guys were still... going and doing Dennis Carluza and, you know, whatever, you know, and they weren't tied down to doing Lawler's TV and the travel schedule, because a lot of people don't realize, man, that USWA travel schedule was a bitch, you know, I mean, you know, Memphis to Nashville, Nashville to Memphis, Memphis to Louisville, Louisville to Evansville, Evansville to, you know, wherever, and boom, fuck Egypt, Mississippi, the Thursday show was, you know, somewhere in, you know, probably Jonesboro, Arkansas on Friday night, Saturday morning TV in Memphis, you know, then back to Nashville for you know, the fairgrounds on Saturday night. I mean, that's a hectic travel schedule. And if you don't have to do that, and you can make the same amount of money, you know, you're going to say, yeah, let's do that. So, you know, and you know, I had the opportunity to do the same thing that Paul E. did, you know, because Dutch Mantel is one of the best minds ever in this business. Like, I think he's one of the most underrated minds ever in this business. You know, that's why some of, you know, Carlos's biggest houses down in Puerto Rico were when Dutch was the booker. You know, so, you know, if I was stuck on anything, you know, I did exactly what Paulie did. You know,
right.
I walked over to Dutch and go, hey, what do you think of this? You know, hey, Tommy, what do you think we should do here? You know, I mean, when you got, you know, the youngest NWA world champion, you have guys that, you know, that have done huge, you know, stadium houses and stuff like that, that you can learn from and pick their brains off of, you know, I did exactly what Paulie did, you know.
Right.
And, you know, it made for some real good shows.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. Well, the next time, you know, then I'll get back to IWA, because I got to just kind of go the way that I found out about it and everything like that. I go to CZW regularly. I started going there in February 2001. So after I started liking what they were doing, I started getting some of their older tapes and stuff like that. And, of course, you know, message board stuff and, you know, what's good, what to see. And of course the 2000 incident came up with the scissor incident.
Right.
And that was kind of like the reintroduction to, oh, that's what Ian's been doing. And, so, I mean, what happened with that whole incident?
Well, the thing was, you know, me and Ponda were married to each other in IWA for like 18 months.
Right.
I mean, you know, and not to mention, you know, all the places we went all over, you know, the country together. And so we'd do this gimmick where we'd hard weigh each other with scissors. And so we decided we were going to do it that night, and neither one of us had a pair of scissors. So I asked Zandig if he could get, you know, one of his guys to get us a pair of scissors. Well, they went out and brought a brand new pair, and they didn't, like, hand us, you know, in the package. They just handed us a pair of scissors. So, you know, when Pondo goes to cut me, you know, well, he fucking filleted me. You know, I mean,
right.
I could literally, you know, put three fingers up in my forehead.
Yeah.
You know, and be in my own skull. So, you know, I won't lie. There was a little bit of agitation there when you know, I cut him back, but I really didn't expect it to open up like a vagina on his arm, like it, you know. So that just stemmed from, you know, make sure that, you know, if you do something, that you do it the same way over and over again, you know. So you know, from time periods after that, if I ever had to borrow a pair of scissors, I was like, these aren't new, right? they've been dulled down a little bit, you know.
Yeah.
And that's just what it was, man. It just, you know, it filleted both of us. You know, I had like 26 stitches in my head. I look like Frankenstein. And, you know, I don't know how many stitches Ponder received in his arm. You know, and, you know, it was funny because Ponder came over to my house a couple of days after we had gotten back, and my son punched him in the balls and said, "That's for cutting my daddy." So,
I know over time, you know, you and John Zandig had heat and stuff like that. Did it stem off of that, or was it future stuff?
It stemmed off of, you know, I just didn't think John paid any dues. You know, I didn't think John respected anybody. You know,
mm-hmm.
He talked to everybody, you know, like, you know, they were his employee, you know.
Right.
You know, it's like probably one of my more famous sayings as far as Zandig was concerned is, you know, while I was killing myself over there in, you know, South Philadelphia and earning, you know, my reputation and earning, you know, what I was, you know, he was still trying to figure out if he was the Ultimate Warrior or Shawn Michaels, you know.
Yeah.
And,
the icon.
You know, yeah, you know, mm-hmm. and don't get me wrong, John's a tough son of a bitch, you know, and,
mm-hmm.
And you know, a crazy dude. And, you know, a lot like myself, wouldn't ask anybody to do anything that he wouldn't do. And there's some shit that he did that I wouldn't do, you know.
Right.
You know, but, you know, that may be the reason why, you know, I started wrestling before him and I'm still wrestling after him, you know.
Right,
You know, because in IWA, you know, when I had Sherry Martel in, every week she'd be like, Ian, you're never going to have a 20-year career. You're never going to have a 20-year career. You're never going to have a 20-year career. I mean, I heard it over and over and over and over again.
Right.
You know, and, you know, I would say that, you know, that I learned from that, you know. It's so funny because Drake Younger just sent me a Facebook message telling me, you know, I appreciate you giving me, you know, the knowledge to know when to do things and when not to do things. And,
right.
You know, what it's like to have to wrestle 8-9 days in a row. You know, he was like, I really appreciate, you know, what you taught me there, boss. You know, and I mean, a lot of these young guys, you know, don't understand that, you know. Yeah, it's the Shane McMahon theory. Sure, you can do it once, you know, but can you do it 2, 3, 4, 5 nights in a row? You know,
yeah.
And the answer to that is no, you can't. Human body just, you know, just doesn't take that. And you know, so
yeah.
You know, my problem spent with John is I just felt that he had no respect. You know, and you know, really and truthfully, still to this day, you know, I believe that.
All right.
You know,
well,
other people would hand me my money in CZW. You know, everybody always, you know, shits on Ian Rotten for, you know, I don't pay people and all that stuff. But you know what? If I don't pay somebody, it's me that tells the person I'm not paying you.
Right.
You know,
right.
It's not somebody else coming to you and I'm paying, you know, I'm paying you, you know, I thank you, you know, for you know, putting your body on the line for me, for doing what you do, you know, in the same retrospect, you know, I just, you know, I didn't like, you know, whether it was Burns paying me or the girl, I can't think of her name, you know, coming and paying me or you know, that just upset me because it felt like that my work wasn't appreciated, you know.
All right. Well, I'll get back to CZW when we hit, like, the invasion thing and all that. So, I mean, back towards, you know, IWA, I got to think early 2000s, you know, you started booking the punks and the heroes, right?
Right.
Well, obviously, you know, no one needs to be told that punks...
2000 to be exact, yeah.
Oh, okay. I mean, nobody needs to be told that punk's the biggest name on TV right now. Did you see that in him back then, or was he just another, you know, hardworking indie guy, you know?
No, absolutely. I screamed it from the rooftops, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I would tell Punk and Cabana, you know, you're the next, you know, Guerrero Malenko. And Axel would be
right.
Like, oh, don't fill those kids' heads with that shit, you know. And, you know, I was like, no, dude, they are, you know what I mean? When I first started running IWA, I had a 16x80, you know, foot trailer that I lived in, you know.
Right.
And any given night, you could have, after a show, you could have, Punk on the couch, Cabana on the floor, Prazak on the floor, A Steel on the floor, you know, Mark Wolf, at one time I had Bad Boy Hito from Japan
living
in my house, Necro, Mark Wolf, Chris Hero, Jim Fannin, all in a 16x80 trailer. You know, my kids gave up their bed. You know, so I mean, it was a crowded thing. You know, but these guys would come after the shows and watch their week before matches and stuff. And Punk was a harsh critic on himself. You know,
right?
So was Hero. You know, but Punk way more than Hero was. You know, and Cabana was, you know, just to go with the flow, dude, that's why I put, Punk against Eddie Guerrero and Tracy Smothers and Rey Mysterio Jr. and, every name that came in the door, that I thought could teach Punk something, I did, because I knew someday, he had all the charisma. His heel work was just absolutely fantastic. You know, it's just like Shawn Michaels. You know, Punk believes he is better than you because he is straight edge. You know, Shawn Michaels believed he was the Heartbreak Kid. You know, is the Heartbreak Kid. He's the showstopper. He's the main eventer. He believed that, and Punk believed that. You know, so when he spoke those words to people that, I'm better than you because I don't do drugs, I don't drink, just really made you feel that cocky arrogance that was coming out of him was true,
Right.
And so I knew he had it in the promo skills and the heart and desire. I saw this kid, wrestle with the flu and wouldn't even take a Tylenol. I saw him wrestle after, breaking his foot. Having a broken bone in his foot. And you could see every movement he would make, for weeks would be painful. But he was still never missing dates until I believe he's fractured his skull. So he was, so driven, but yet so much a student of the game, and the same thing goes with Hero. I mean, Hero, the videotape collection that kid had, and if there was anything that I ever wanted to, get any research done on, I'd be like, Chris, you got, So, it was a tight knit, type of family. We'd go in the back of the house to do whatever us adults were going to do, at that time. And, Punk would be going through my ECW video collection and, besides watching his own matches and stuff like that, I'm going to be perfectly honest with you. I knew the kid had it. I knew he had all the talent in the world. I knew he had the ability to make it, but I really thought Cabana was a superior wrestler, entertainer. Well, I really thought Cabana was more made out for WWE because of Punk's temperament, and inability to censor himself,
I don't know if you saw what happened past Monday, but
One time in Wisconsin, this chick threw a beer on him at an indoor volleyball court, and they had like sand pits, and Punk chased this chick down into the sand pits. and tackled her. I saw it, but I really think, throwing a beer on somebody is a lot less you know, intimidating than being punched in the back and in the kidneys and stuff like that. I mean, that's truly WWE.
But I don't even think he hit the right guy, you know.
Well, I mean, at that point, you got to swing on somebody. I mean, pretty much, you know, in defense.
Right.
You know,
I hope they were at least in the same car or something.
Right, yeah, you know. But, I mean, you know, when you hear a group of people, you know, let's shove him down the stairs. Let's kick his ass, you know. And you get in that situation, and he's probably really never been in that situation, you know.
Right.
You kind of got to have some fear there, you know, because I mean he does have that ability to draw so much heat. I mean,
oh yeah, that's kind of my first reaction to that. Honestly, after Monday was that. Why did they allow him to turn full heel knowing how much heat he can garner and then send him in the middle of the crowd where when he was face, it's fine. It's like, now I'm surrounded by my people. Now you're surrounded by people who don't like you. And, you know,
Well, Jay, this is just one asshole's opinion. So let me just say this, with this is just one asshole's opinion. I thought the WWE did a horrible job Monday night. Okay. How old is Vince McMahon? 64, 65 years old, and he's out there kicking the shit out of the world champion, the best in the world, you know. So
you get a couple
beers in some of these people, and they're thinking, well, a 64, 65 year old man just beat up the best in the world. I got a shot, you know.
Sure.
I mean,
not to mention any other time that Vince McMahon ever got into the ring with Stone Cold, The Rock, Triple H, whatever it was a month-on-month, like, built-up feud. This guy returns to TV and steps in the ring with the world champ. Like, ah.
Yeah, I think it was a real effort to solidify Punk as a heel, but it was also Vince's ego of saying, well, I can solidify this guy as a heel. You know, the people are going to love me, you know. I really think it had a lot to do with Vince McMahon's ego too, you know.
A dive over the announce table or something else.
Yeah, you know. I mean, I give a lot of people say, Vince does this wrong and Vince does that wrong and this and that. You know, yeah, I can second guess Vince McMahon. But the bottom line is he's a billionaire and I'm not.
Sure.
You know.
Of course.
So he obviously is doing something, you know, incredibly right. But I just think that was a wrong move in the world of what CM Punk can be and will
sure.
be. You know. I don't think the WWE's had a heel like Punk since, you know, Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart days, you know, and it's a different breed of fan nowadays, you know, also.
Sure.
So,
you think that when you were saying, you know, Punk and Cabana, you thought Cabana would have been more, you know, cookie cutter for, you know, what they look for. But Punk was the more driven, more critical on what he was doing. Do you think that drive actually was what got it done?
It has to be, yeah. I mean, because Punk does not have that little thing in his brain that tells you to shut up. He just doesn't have it. And, all the politics and all that stuff, you know, little side story. The last time that I've actually ever seen CM Punk was after Chris Candido died. And we wrestled each other on UXW Frank Goodman show, I think it was, up there in New York. And, I hugged him and told him, you know, I wish him the best of luck. And, I said it's going to be, you know, a lot different without having you around. I was like, you know, I never wanted to be a millionaire. I just wanted to be able to pay my bills on time. And he looks at me dead in the face and goes, I want to be a fucking millionaire. The dude is definitely driven and without a doubt, you know, But I just thought I'm not saying Cabana wasn't as driven as Punk. I'm just saying I thought he was going to be able to play the politic game better than Punk.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
You know, because I've heard from, you know, so many guys that are wrestlers and not sports entertainers that place made them fucking miserable. You know?
Right. Sure.
So I thought it would be the same lines for Punk would be, you know, he would get fed up with it and say, fuck it, I'm going back to Ring of Honor. You know?
Mm-hmm.
This is God's honest truth. When I saw Paul Lee involved, I was like, oh, this is the best thing that's ever going to happen to Punk. Because Paul knows talent, you know? I mean, I told everybody, I was like, Paul Heyman will help CM Punk more than CM Punk could ever dream of, you know? Because I've always fought through everything, including Paul Heyman's been fired here and Paul Heyman's been fired here. I've always felt that he's been collecting a check from WWE from day one, you know, whether it was as a consultant or whatever, you know, the guy knows the history of the business. He knows how to revamp storylines of old and the new, put his own spin on it. He knows how to come up with his own stuff. He knows how to listen. He knows the other people he needs to listen to, you know. That's what makes Paulie a genius.
Yeah.
Not original ideas, you know, because most of the stuff that you know, he's ever came up with that he's gotten credit for wasn't fully his ideas.
Right.
I knew when Paulie was getting involved with Punk, you know, what is it now, 4 years ago or whatever, you know, that was going to be the best thing for him, you know, that this guy could push him to greatness, you know,
right.
And I will give Paulie that credit.
When they started with this angle, you know, recently with Paulie, the first thing I thought was, all right, great, now, because I don't know what actually is going on with Brock Lesnar, but I figured here's what's going to happen. Okay, CM Punk's going to heel. He's going to be that smart heel that weasels his way out of things. He's going to be the guy that can go in the main event of any pay-per-view. And then he's got his business guy that finds the loopholes, and then he's got the crusher that just lays, you know, clears the path all the way to the pay-per-views for the most part. And then I don't know what's going on with Brock. And then when I saw Ryback thing pop up, I'm like, Ryback's going to turn, and he's going to be his bodyguard type guy. And I think that's the only thing missing from what he's doing right now, just in my own, you know, fantasy booking or whatever.
Well, you know,
but,
I was watching Punk the other night, and I saw several glimpses of Tracy Smothers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I mean, I could really look at Punk and see him channeling, you know, the Memphis heel, you know, that he learned from Tracy, you know, and whatever they do with him, you know, the thing that, you know, I think can be done, here is, you know, Punk can be a modern day Ric Flair, you know,
yeah.
And if you put the right people, with him, you know, his work stands on his own. His interviews stand on his own, you know.
Sure.
But if you put the other right people around, because he's so hard. If you're a wrestling fan, he is so hard to not like.
That's exactly what I was saying too. Because the less he wrestles, the more you get the chance to hate him. You know.
Exactly. If you're in the wrestling and not sports entertainment, you are pulling for this guy to make the wrestling business better, which in a wrestling fan's eyes makes it more entertaining then, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I love when Punk uses the phrase, I am a professional wrestler, you know.
when they tried to ban that term.
Right. You know, I absolutely love that because, you know, that's what he was brought up on. That's what he did, you know, over and over and over again every weekend, you know. So when you get to the top, do you really stop being that? You know, and that's why I thought Cabana was more cut out for that part of the WWE. You know, was he could deal with the, oh, you're going to do this or you're going to do that more, you know, type deal. You know, I thought a great idea for Cabana when he was up there would have been to put him with that Crime Time guys, you know, as the white Jewish kid, you know, kind of like in Malibu's Most Wanted, you know, type deal. Because Cold is so entertaining that way, and I thought that they could do some great vignettes and everything like that, you know, and I didn't understand why Creative just didn't see that, you know, because
he had a feud with Homicide in Ring of Honor that kind of did that same type of thing where he took that on just to mess with Homicide. It was pretty fun.
Yeah, you know, and you know, the white Jewish kid, deal with the two street hoodies. You know, I just saw, you know, a lot of Public Enemy in there that could be done. And, you know, everything from, you know, ever since we got back from Japan, you know, Teddy's been bisexual, you know, he's not bisexual, that's bilingual, you know, that kind of stuff, you know. So, I mean, it's, you know, I personally really feel, and like I said, it's just one opinion, you know, one asshole's opinion. I really feel that they missed the ball with Cabana. You know, they really dropped that. I mean, you know, a few years ago, Cabana had a match with Larry Sweeney, who, you know, God rest his soul, was just, you know, very difficult to work with at that time period and stuff like that for IWA. Cabana just turned in a great match. I mean,
right.
A great match. And, and this was, and I thought, man, these guys really missed it. They truly missed it.
So getting back to, you know, what you were doing, I had just watched the Hero shoot that he did earlier this year. I think it was just before signing with WWE, and you know, just like you said, they actually did it at his house, and Bryce Remsburg did the interview as for Smart Mark, and again, right behind Hero in his own
great referee. Why doesn't somebody give that guy a job? Bryce Remsburg,
I have no idea. I think he's the
referee.
Best in the indies. I really do.
Yeah, you know. But go ahead.
Yeah, right behind Chris Hero is just an entire shelf of wrestling DVDs, and you couldn't be more right about that. But he went over, you know, the CM Punk and himself feud that, you know, you put together, and he said there was that point where, you know, Punk had fractured his skull, and he was healing back from that, and he said, I think something along the lines of Hero hit him with a headbutt or something like that, and Punk took complete... He took it completely personal, and then at some point they had heat, and and then you took complete. You're just like, well, you guys are wrestling again, then. Oh, you don't like each other.
Exactly.
What was your recollection of that?
Well, you know, I learned from Lawler very, very early on, and Eddie Gilbert. You know, the best place to settle legitimate heat is in a ring. You know, if you want two guys that are as competitive as CM Punk and Chris Hero to go out there and turn in a marvelous performance. And I'm not talking about shooting on each other. I'm talking from the aspect of these guys are going to go out there to try to outdo one another
right. In
the ring just for the purpose of saying, I carried the match. You know, and I knew that these two were tailor-made for that. You know, because Chris really wasn't a shit talker, and Punk brought out shit talking in Hero, and I'm not talking about, you know, in wrestling. I'm talking about, you know, as far as, you know, when he would come to me, You know, he would be just, oh, Ian, there's just something about that guy. It just rubs me the wrong way, you know. And, you know, he would then, you know, go on to say, you know, it just kills me that he thinks he's better than me. And, you know, kind of the same thing happened with Punk and BJ Whitmer, which I don't know if, you know, a lot of people know about this. I might be letting the cat out of the bag here, you know. But I guess that's what these internet radio shows are for. But, there was a gimmick going with, you know, BJ and Daphne. And then, Punk kind of, you know, dipped his hand in BJ's Kool-Aid, if you know what I mean. And
not
then,
Punk.
You know, you know, and then it was, a misunderstanding over a statement that BJ made about them, him, BJ and Chris carrying the locker room or something, and Punk felt left out in it, as far as, the wrestling talent was concerned. And, next thing you know, Punk and BJ had a feud, and it wasn't so much over the girl as I believe it was over the ego of, how dare you say you're better than me, you know,
right.
Type of thing. Chris, besides Claudio, I really have never seen a bigger student of the wrestling business. I mean, when I went over to Europe and did wrestling camps and was teaching Claudio, and I know that's going to hit a lot of people in the face, like, what? Ian Rotten teaching Claudio Castagnoli? What? You know, but
right.
It's the truth.
Uh-huh.
I would teach him, taking a shoot hold or a sugar hold and how to make it into a professional wrestling hold without hurting the guy. And, like, dude would take his notebook and draw little diagrams. And, like, meanwhile, I'd be holding this guy in this what could be a very painful hold while Claudio's drawing, you know? I mean, Claudio's first appearance over here was for IWA, and he threw some of the shittiest forearms that I've ever seen in my life. I went back to the dressing room. I said, how the fuck are you from Europe and throw shitty European uppercuts?
Mm-hmm.
You know? And from then on, the kid was driven to throw a European uppercut pretty as hell from any angle, anywhere, any place, any time.
He turned that into his thing for a while. Throwing
right.
people in the air and catching them with it and everything.
Right, you know, and, you know, so, you know, I would actually say, you know, as far as a student of the game is concerned, it would be Claudio, Hero, Punk. But Punk surpassed both of them put together, probably, in just pure driven, I'm going to fucking secede and shove this down everybody's fucking throat.
Right.
You know, that was, you know, definitely, you know, his deal for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let's see where I want to go from this because I got so much. I'm not sure where I'm at again. Not great chronologically, but you're doing, you know, obviously you're doing your King of the Death match and all that. What year was it that you booked Nick Mondo? Was it 2003?
Mondo came in at 2001.
Oh, he came in at 2001.
Yeah, for
okay,
King
cool.
of Death.
So cool. So I'm already earlier that's where I wanted to be. Now, obviously you had heat with Zandig and all that stuff, and it seemed to be like a clear separation from who was working where, and there was a lot of stuff going on, you know, where, man, like that. Now you started to see the tapes through, you know, the tape trading and stuff, and you go, man, I'd love to see this guy over here, and like, oh man, I loved King of the Death. I just love to see this guy, you know, head over there and hit that off. And then Mondo
right.
went in, you know, round one. I think he went out round one, right? Or no, maybe round two, right?
No, he went out round two to me, yeah.
Okay.
And 2001,
now,
two to me.
What was the, you know, what was the vibe with that? Was it, was there an actual, like, listen, this guy can't go any further than such and such, or, you know, we can't book certain people, or, you know, what was the whole thing between you and the CZW thing at that point?
I never played those games. Dude, we could have made so much money if John would have been the way I was, you know.
Right.
I was all about business. That's why Sanjay Dutt won the IWA light heavyweight title, you know, and everything like that. John was, if it wasn't for Mike Burns being involved in the CZW angle, like, John would have just probably tried to bury us, you know.
Was
in it.
Was there too close of a connection, like with Zandig and like a wife beater who at the time was, you know, running through shit, and like a Nick Gage? Because I would figure like they would showed up just as soon as Mondo did, but was that more of like a tighter knit thing?
Well, I knew Mondo from Mid American Wrestling too.
Okay.
So I knew Nick, thought he was, respectful, you know, hardworking, you know, fucking lunatic, you know, not only was I impressed by him, but, I liked him. So, mm-hmm. That's another thing as far as the CZW guys are concerned, you know. I still think Wifebeater had the mentality that he was CZW, and that's all he really wanted to be, you know, kind of the same thing with Nate Hatred, you know.
Right.
But Nikki wasn't like that also, you know. Nick Gage wasn't like that at all, you know.
Mm-hmm.
He's one of my absolute favorite people that, you know, that you would definitely call homegrown CZW talent I've ever had out here, you know.
Mm-hmm.
The thing about it was, I never treated CZW guys as outsiders, you know.
Right.
And whenever we came in, John treated us like outsiders. It was like we weren't working together as a team. You know,
right?
It's
I think an example of that.
Go ahead.
I think it was before the actual invasion thing where they did Chris Hero and B-Boy versus the Hay Club, right?
Right, right.
At Cage of Death, and they squashed the shit out. I mean, as a fan, that was a fantastic match to watch, just because, you know, you love to see brutality and violence, and these guys just kick the shit out of them. I mean, it turns out to be, you know, two of the best indie workers in the fucking business that they squashed.
Right.
But, of course, their ability to sell and make it that much better just made it that much better. But, of course, anyone who was booking them as their, you know, their flagships wouldn't be happy about that. And that's, Hero said when he went back, he said he caught a lot of heat from Punk. Like, how dare you, like, let them treat
right.
you like that? And
he caught more heat from Punk than he caught from me.
Yeah.
Is another reason why, you know, Punk always got those big matches, because I felt that no matter what he said or done, you know, that Punk thought IWA was his home. You know, and
mm-hmm.
this is where he was working his balls off twice, you know, two, three times a week, you know, to try to succeed, you know. So, that's why, you know, Punk wrestled Eddie Guerrero every time he came in for me, you know.
Yeah.
And there was nothing against Chris. I just, you know, it's like when we were given Dingo the run that we were giving him as world champion, you know,
right.
Whether it was Zandig or DJ who owned the company at the time, I don't know, but, it was, I believe, Best of the Best or something. Dingo was supposed to come in and work, something McBride. I can't think of his, what
Ryan McBride.
His name. Right.
Ryan.
So,
McBride.
And was told that he was going to job to him. And I told Dingo, I said, you can't do that. You know, it's a very,
right.
very visible company. You're the world champion of our company. You can't do that. And Dingo got it. You know, you know, so he didn't come. You know,
mm-hmm.
You know, so, you know, and I definitely don't think Chris going into that match thought, you know, that, you know, Nikki and Nate were going to kick the shit out of him.
Right.
Know?
Yeah.
You know, because you know, Chris is such a nice, nice kid, you know.
Right.
And you know, I think in many ways he had to learn the nastiness of the politics of the wrestling business, you know,
mm-hmm.
You know, so yeah, he got more heat from Punk than he did from me. So,
right.
You know, I just don't think that was expected, but I mean, if you think, about that situation, John was a dumbass, because that should have went to Cage of Death, and you know, he finally beats me at Cage of Death, and you know, everybody talks about that last match of me and John in Zandig sucking. They don't realize, you know, I went to the ring with 104 degree temperature, with the first time I was bit by a brown recluse spider bite on my neck.
Now you seem to attract those, huh?
Yeah.
I know what the I know what the feed one. If I had one as a pet, it's you, man.
But yeah, you know.
But yeah, three of them so far.
Yeah. Yep.
Wow.
And four actually. Four. I got one on my hip also, but I caught it right away and was able to get it taken care of without me getting sick or anything. But And the other thing about that match is, you know, it's hard to do stuff like that when you just don't trust your opponent, you know,
mm-hmm.
And God's honest truth, and I'm not afraid to admit it or nothing, you know, we got up on that scaffold thing that they set, which was the wrong shit, and I didn't feel comfortable with John overhead pressing me at that point because the whole thing's shaking. And I said to him, I said, man, I'm scared shitless. Take care of me. You know, and what did he do? He threw me off of the damn thing without even taking the bump himself. You know?
Right.
You know, so, you know, I was justified in my thoughts.
Right.
You know, and then, you know, I get back to Kentucky. I go to the hospital and, you know, I'm told, you know, I have 24 to 28 hours before, you know, this venom from the spire would have killed me. So,
damn.
Yeah.
So
before
I get back, because I do want to get into that invasion angle, but like I said, I jump around too much, so it's hard to keep up with. But 03, because that was, I think, just before all of that was going on, one of the best King of the Death matches, to my knowledge. People still talk about it, and that was – JC Bailey's first King of the Death match, right? Where he went to the finals?
He might have been in 02, I'm not sure. But
I could be wrong, but I thought it was like the first one he was in, he actually went to the finals against Pondo, and it, like, just his performance throughout the whole thing was just unbelievable, and it was just like, wow, like, again, I think you saw something in a dude that just knew, well, not only is he young and maybe not as experienced in the style as he, you know, could be as far as, you know, three rounds of death matches.
Right.
That you clearly seen that he was at that level as young as he might have been. And, I mean, what was it, you know, about JC at that point that you were just like, let's go with it? I mean, he didn't falter it throughout, so...
You know, if I've never met a bigger student in the game and the guys that were the technical guys, I never met a guy with bigger heart and balls than JC. You know,
mm-hmm.
He absolutely loved the wrestling business, and was an incredible. How do I want to say this? He had to be talked out of things that could have been career ending. You know,
right.
it was like he would say stuff to me, and I go, "What? No, you can't do
yeah.
that." You know, there was several times throughout JC's career that I had to say, "No, JC, you can't do that." You know, but he was fearless in his approach to things, but yet had all the love and respect for the business, of a 20-year vet, and
yeah.
you know, at such a young age, you know, and the really sad part is, you know, if he would have been, you know, around, you know, the next year was his year, you know, but you know,
yeah.
unfortunately he wasn't, you know,
right.
He reminded me so much of Nick Mondo, but yet with
better
more psychology.
Right.
But right with more psychology, you know, because he was around guys like me and Tracy Smothers and you know Bull Payne and you know so on so many guys that could teach him. You know.
Yeah, I was I was an East Coast fan, so obviously I was biased towards our guys. So anyone who came over was like, yeah, cool, okay, but we still like our guy. And as soon as I seen JC and all the stuff that he was doing, I was like, he's better than Mondo. Like he's
right.
Mondo, but better. And something that I always, and I'm only a fan, but I always saw out of him was his professionalism walking to the ring. Not only was he acknowledging the fans, he was looking where every single prop, every single whatever was set up, just because he had shit going on in his mind that I don't think most guys do. And he was moving
and,
a
know,
light
I,
to
I think that,
6 inches.
I think that,
and
go ahead.
Good. Yeah, I mean, he was moving
I was
a light to
say,
6 inches to the left and moving
right.
a light. Where's the chair? I planned on a chair. Where's the chair? Then he'd find the chair. He'd yell to somebody, "Go get the chair in here." It just he had it all worked out.
A lot of that preparation, I really think that he got from Pondo, you know, from working Pondo so much, believe it or not, that was something that Pondo was really good at, was spotting in a mess of nasty weapons something that could be used without killing one another, you know, that looked
mm-hmm.
dangerous, but you know, could still be used, and Pondo immediately would know how to use that weapon without hurting the other guy, you know?
Right.
So I really feel that JC learned that from him, and the reason why I make that statement is because JC took away from every match he was in a learning experience. And
yeah.
you know, and I'm sure some of your listeners would be like, "Oh yeah, I'm sure when he was going out there all fucked up, he was still taking away from what he was learning in the ring in that match, no matter what his condition going into that match was. You know, him and you know, Trent Acid both had that ability, you know.
Yeah.
To do, you know.
Two of the best on the indies in their respects, and, you know, sadly they're gone, but definitely, I mean, as
right.
far as you talk about indie superstars, you got to mention the two of them.
You know, it's just like I just said, I don't know if you saw it the other day on Facebook, you know, somebody was talking about how good Trent was. You know, Trent was so good he made Cashmere look good. You know, and that's tough to do. You know, Trent said to me, "Yo, Uncle Ian, when you gonna bring me in the Mid South?" at one of the Gathering of the Juggalos, and I was like, yo, Trent, when are you going to stop being a fuck-up and get your shit together before you're dead before you're 30, you know? And he was like,
yeah.
You know, he just, like, looked at me like, you know, that I had that honesty with him. I was like, Trent, you're fucking incredible, but, you know, I'm not putting up with that, you know? And I love to be around the guy, you know, at those PWU shows we did and stuff. I love being around him. Always thought, you know, he was a hell of a worker, you know, but I mean,
oh, yeah.
he just, you know, damn, he could have been so much more.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh,
I mean,
fuck yeah. He was a superstar, but, yeah, CZW Invasion angle. This was one of the most talked about angles CZW ever did. When you guys ran in, immediately people were like, oh, who the fuck? Oh shit. That's, oh my God. Fuck. And it actually seemed like some takeover thing. Like they tried that back in 2001 with Hardaway Wrestling. And
right.
You're just like, dude, you can watch it back on DVD at the time, VHS. I was there live,
yeah.
And then still watched the VHS and still didn't know who the fuck the guys that ran in the ring were. So I'm like, well,
right.
It kind of looked like chaos, but I still don't know who any of these guys are. But like after, you know, a couple beats, you were like, oh, shit. Oh, man, this is going down. And you got excited because you knew what, you know, some of the things could go on in the future were. What went into that feud, obviously Zandig not wanting to do business, I guess maybe Mike Burns, like you said, you know, what brought everything together to make that happen?
Dude, Mike Burns was the driving force behind that. First of all, if Mike Burns wouldn't have been involved at all in that situation, it would have never happened. So for the fans that love that and enjoyed that, you know, next time you see Mike Burns, pat him on the fucking back. because it really was a great experience.
Right.
A lot of people don't realize JC and Corporal didn't even know where the fuck we were going.
Oh, wow.
That's how secret it was. Like, I think maybe 5 people total knew about it because the boys are like a bunch of fucking women. They can't keep their fucking mouth shut, you know? And
yeah.
That was what made it so fucking awesome is security was like, what the fuck's going on here? You know,
mm-hmm.
The security wasn't smart enough. The boys in the back weren't smart enough, you know,
which is all great,
you know,
but it was that
literally we got to my grandmother's house in Baltimore and, I told Corporal and JC, I said, okay, I can tell you what we're doing now. And they were like, we're going to a show. And I was like, no, we're running in at the arena on CZW on Zandig tonight. And the funniest thing was JC looks at me and goes, does he know? You know, I was like, yes, he knows.
No, we're
know?
Getting no pay and we're just doing it.
You know, and
that's funny.
Well, the great thing about that is, you know, they throw us in the cop cars and handcuff us and stuff. And they took us back to the hotel and, you know, we're at that Holiday Inn right there up by the stadiums and stuff. And
mm-hmm.
We're getting out of the car in handcuffs and stuff. And the cops are, unhandcuffing us. And, like, the employees from the Holiday Inn are like, what the hell is
yeah,
going on here?
They're releasing people here?
Yeah. You know?
I think...
But, you know, you know, Burns came to the hotel afterwards and paid us. I mean, it was a very well thought out, you know, angle, you know, and Mike was like, you know, look, you know, we're going to rip off IWA Mid-South a little bit. We're going to get Zandig's wife involved in this. This is what's going to make it believable, you know, and, you know, the security wasn't smart enough. So, I mean, we're throwing legit punches at security, you know, I mean,
I'm sure they appreciated that. Thanks, John.
Corporal split one of them open with a staple gun.
Wow.
You know, because Corporal and JC didn't know that they weren't smartened up. So when security wasn't selling, they took offense to it.
Right.
So they start beating the shit out of the guys, you know. So it really was, you know, an awesome, you know, deal through the whole thing. And I think a lot of the bit that John didn't want to do business was that he hated people that he considered his fans sitting out in the crowd wearing IWA Mid-South T-shirts. And I've seen a lot of that happen
because it was just a very welcome, you know, it was a breath of fresh air. It came in, it gave you like an alternate faction to deal with. And, you know, the fans are smart enough to know that, hey, this is still CZW, and this is great for CZW. Just as,
right.
You know, I'm sure your guys loved Nick Gage coming in or those that, you know, you could still go kill that motherfucker, but he's fun to have around, no? I mean, but,
you know. John absolutely hated that. He considered it like they were a bunch of Benedict Arnolds and it was an act of treason.
That's funny. I mean, we actually had a wing of the arena that just donned the IWA shirt. And,
right, Don't Hate Us If You Ain't a shirt was a great seller because of that feud.
Yeah, I bought a couple of shirts in my day there too, in that same stretch.
Just tied it up in the bottom of the ninth.
Oh, jeez. What can you do? Yeah, but, I mean, that pretty much led to Tournament of Death 2. Now, it was, you know, pretty much like a split roster for the most part, which, you know, before that it was like Zandig and his guys and then, you know, maybe a guy or two. And it was only the second one, but the first one was completely dominated by, you know, CZW guys, and then this was like a kind of like a company versus company Tournament of Death. And
right.
Which I don't know, you know, how you feel about it, but I believe you went in, didn't you go in round one against Necro?
Yeah, I think it was.
So it was kind of like your guy versus your guy, and I mean, it's almost like they had an overloaded roster on that side, or, you know, whatever they were doing, but it was obviously all people who belong there. Nate Webb went in first round against Zandig and said he was scared for his fucking life, because he's like, I don't know about this guy. But, you know, it ended up, Mondo comes off the roof for Zandig, punctures arteries in his back, you end up, you know, working the last, he's worked, I think, like something else somewhere after that, but I'm not really sure. Might have just been a signing or an appearance or something. I wasn't there, but more or less like his last thing was that tournament. And, you know, you ended up in the finals with him. I mean, what was your thoughts on that whole day?
Well, you know, The thing with Nick is he was so beaten up from that bump that I really felt that I had to let him beat me up because of the way things were, and pretty much knowing that, you know, he was going out and he was going to be done, you know. I wanted him, you know, to look like Superman in front of his hometown fans, you know. I mean,
right.
I know it's not Minnesota, but you know what I mean.
Right.
In front of his home federation.
No,
fans,
he was
You know,
CZW guy. You were the supervillain from, you know.
Right.
From
so,
IWA.
You know, I mean, when Burns asked me if I mind putting him over, you know, I was like, absolutely not. You know, I don't mind at all. I was like, but, you know, with the darkness coming and all that stuff, you know, I felt at that point we just had to give the fans, you know, my ass whipping, you know, and that I would get my heat back, you know, later on in the feud. Because really, at that point, I thought we were going to Cage of Death.
Damn sure should have.
Yeah, you know, I really thought that we were going to Cage of Death at that point, until, you know, Burns informed me that you know, it was going to be cut off when it, you know, was cut off at the end of the summer there. You know, so you know, Nick worked really hard. He you know, did some crazy inventive stuff in the wrestling business. You know, so at that particular point of where we were at, I was just like, you know, at the end of it, you know, let's just give it, you know, a clean and total, utter, you know, decimation of Ian Rotten finish, you know.
Right.
And Burns was cool with that too, so, you know, that's what we went with, you know.
Right.
And, you know, dude took care of, you know, stumping on my head better than probably anybody ever has.
Right. Yeah. Which is probably rough with, you know, some, you know, broken blood vessels. I mean, he had, you know, punctured arteries in his back and, you know, I'm
Jake,
sure
he looked like he'd been shot.
Oh, yeah.
His back looked like he had been shot. You know, I mean,
yeah.
that's exactly what it looked like. You know?
Yeah, that was a rough bump.
And see, you know, that's why Burns was wondering what my concern would be as far as putting him over, was because, you know, he had taken that bump, you know, and for him to be able to go in and beat me, you know, tells a hell of a tale, you know.
Sure.
So
you're not the one that took that bump, so yeah.
Right. You know, so I you know, I still had no problems with it and thought that, you know, it was the best place to be, you know, for sure.
That's cool. Well, going into the next match, that I believe the next thing was that next Delaware show, that, and then it was like you and Zandig in the cage after that, right? Or was there one in between?
Right.
Yeah,
I think we
one.
Did something at the arena. I think we did something at the arena. It was like me, JC, and Nate, or something like that. I'm not totally sure.
That makes sense from what you're saying. Yeah. Let me see if I have it. I mean, just the next thing that stood out was that next Delaware show, because, again, like, they more or less followed up a Tournament of Death with, like, another Tournament of Death-style match, and it was
right.
Like, oh, well, fucking shit. What it was, oh, no, I'm not getting it from, oh, yeah, now it was Aftermath, and I think that was the, Ian Rotten defeated Necro, Corporal Robinson, Nate Webb in a bloodbath. So they more or less put your guys against your guys in a four-way.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, so that's what they did, and you guys went in there and did that.
And the fucked up thing about that, Jay, is, like, Zandig tells me, you know, he doesn't want me bumping for the guys, you know, because it's going to be me and him, and, you know, he wants me, you know, looking uber strong and all this other shit. And, stuff like that. And then he comes out and cuts a promo on the microphone, you know, telling the people, oh, he doesn't even bump for his own guys. You know, and
shit.
So that was another thing. It got, a little bit of trust issues going on.
Yeah. Holy shit. No, it's definitely that's something else for they would do that type of thing. But, then you went into that match, and again, you know, he went on his shoot and, you know, went on and on about how you were scared of heights and this and that, and, you know, and he's, I don't know, like, he gained some respect, but as you say, he surely didn't show, like, full respect out of everything that, you know, you brought into his company and, you know, through Mike Burns and everything, but still, the addition of everything that you brought with you did a lot for CZW.
It wasn't a case of being scared of heights. It was a question of being scared of the contraption that they had put together. You know,
yeah.
For one, I just didn't feel like there was enough room up there for him to do that overhead press thing to me.
Right.
That he did, and I really didn't trust him. You know.
Yeah.
It was. You know, I'm going to do this because Mike Burns is telling me, you know, I should trust you, but I don't trust you. You know,
right.
I fully admit, I said to him, I said, I'm scared to death, you know, take care of me, you know, in which, you know, he showed exactly what a piece of garbage he was and did not take care of me, You know, I didn't know if the table. I didn't know if the table was on fire. I'm talking to him. I'm telling him. You know, is the table lit? Is the table lit? He's not talking to me. You know, I'm trying to tell him. You know, if it's lit, just Davey Boy slam me. You know, the table off of this thing, which would have been a real good finish, also. You know. And, you know, he just launches me.
Wow.
You know? I broke a rib on the side of the table. I didn't find that out until I was in the hospital for the brown recluse bite. The guy is very reckless. Don't believe me. Ask Nate Webb.
I don't know, man. The thing is, too, is, like, when that ended in that match, I guess, and was supposed to end and squash everything, and, you know, you cut the promo saying you respect him and everything, and I don't know if he just fucking looked at you or walked to the back or what he did, but what was the real feelings?
Job.
I mean, that's the on-the-mic thing. What? How did it actually end between the two of you? Was it just, like, a fucking, you know, smirk and you two never seen each other again, or, you know, what was it?
No, man. I mean, like the. I guess the last time I seen him was when I worked Danny Havoc at the arena, and we had a few brief words together. You know, I believe that was the night that I get all the heat for shit, but I believe that was the night that John Zandig yanked up a innocent fan for videotaping in the crowd. And, went on his business about doing it. We had a discussion about business, how people, you know, how wrestling fans, you know, say they love a wrestling company, but then, you know, they do shit like videotaping the stuff and putting it on YouTube and, you know, and taking money out of the pockets of the company, you know. So we had a little discussion about that, and stuff, and my true feelings for John is, I think he was a horrible worker, you know, but he was very brave and very tough, you know, but very reckless, really didn't know how to work a lot of things, so it was safe for the other guy, but, you know, he would still go ahead and do it. You know, my heart goes out to him for the things with his sons. As a father, I can't imagine going through those things. I hope that, you know, the Lord gives him the serenity to get through those things, because, you know, like I said, I couldn't imagine as a father, you know, going through those things. I have my oldest boy, John Calvin, doing some stuff and reffing and things things of that nature. And I think he became, you know, a very good referee, and, so it's fun to have your kids with you when you're around this industry, especially after all the time I spent on the road and away from my kids. So that's fun. So I can't imagine the heartache and the pain that, that he goes through,
it's brutal
with the loss of a child, and like I said, from that aspect, my heart feels for him. I just don't respect him as a worker, dude might be a better business guy than me, probably is, as far as in-ring work, from everything from technical to still having a career to this day, I think I run circles around him. You know, some people may agree with that, some people may disagree with it. You know, that's
right. Now,
that's why we all have opinions.
Just to touch on this, before we get off of Zandig, because I have tons of IWA stuff to ask you about. What's your thoughts on Masada is doing a shoot now? I think it's done, but it hasn't been released yet. And Masada had pretty much put out there, like, he couldn't wait to work Zandig because he didn't think he was that tough, and he wanted to prove him wrong and all that stuff. And just to me, like, you started pretty much your statement on Zandig saying, yeah, like, you know, this and this happened, but he's a tough fucking dude. And Masada's clearly a tough dude as well, but do you have any thoughts on that? Or?
Well, my thought on that is, you know, at Sunday Bloody Sunday, the show we did in San Antonio, Texas, this is me once again when guys have beef with each other. I put Necro and Masada in the ring against each other because they had heat with one another at that time. And Masada legitimately knocked Necro down. I mean, there was no ifs, ands, buts about it. It was a legit knockdown. I mean,
right.
It would have been scored as a 2-point round if it was boxing. And, you know, split his lip wide open and I mean, gave him basically like a cleft palate lip. I mean, it was just absolutely nasty.
Jesus.
And, so my money's on Masada. I mean, John's older now, you know, we ain't spring chickens anymore. You know, whenever that would have happened, you know, I think if John would have done some of the shit that he done with other people with Masada, you know,
wouldn't be good, right?
Oh, Masada would have fucked him up. And, you know, and with, you know, no thought whatsoever on Masada's part of, you know, this is John Zandig, you know,
Mhm. Yeah. Now I hear that. It was just crazy, like, out of nowhere in 2012. Like, yeah, I wish I would have fucking got that guy in the ring. It's like, oh, okay, then. You know, go ahead. Shit.
Well, you know,
I know he caught, like, a lot of heat going over in Japan. And, like, you know, Zandig burned a lot of bridges in Japan, so he went to Japan and, like, oh, were you with Zandig? I'm like, no. But I don't know if that's where that came from.
Well, man, why do you put me in a situation where I have to defend John Zandig?
I'm just talking. That's all I'm doing.
The thing about Zandig was, the Japanese were doing everything in their power that they could to get paydays down. And
yeah.
John Zandig was saying, okay, look, if my boys are flying all the way the fuck over here and, you know, traveling 14 hours on a plane and doing the things that they're doing to themselves, you're going to pay us, you know, what we agreed upon. You know?
Right.
And, you know, guys like Ponda were kind of undercutting, you know, things and stuff like that, and it became a very ugly situation. The fucked up problem with Japan now is you got all these guys in Jakarta buying their own airplane tickets and shit, and going over there and working for $100 a match and all that stuff. So it's like, why should they pay somebody? Why should they buy an airplane ticket? You know,
right?
You know, and really, and like I said, he was probably a better businessman than I am. That's what John Zandig was trying to protect against. At least that's what I believe he was trying to protect against. And for that matter, I give him kudos. You know, like I said, my biggest problem with him was in ring reckless. You know, not giving a shit about your opponent, you know.
Right.
As spectacular as it was, if John Zandig truly cared about Nick Mondo, they would have never went off that building that day. You know, sometimes you have to think, you know, not only for yourself but for your talent. And and obviously he went off of it with them. You know, but he wasn't in the exposed situation that Mondo was, for sure. You know, John tried to do right by his guys as far as business was concerned. You know, especially going, to Japan. You know, and
right,
I think that's what got him heat with the Japanese. you know, was that. That's just being doing good business. You know, I mean, I think that's why you know, Japan's fucked up now. You know, is because, you know, guys buying their own airplane tickets and, you know, working for $100 a match. You know.
Yeah, I hear that. It is what it is. I mean, I'm obviously a lot of the indies and a lot of, you know, even overseas and all that has changed, I'm sure, a lot payday wise and, you know, what's put in wise and who's booking themselves and who's booking, you know. I mean, I've heard a lot of that, people paying for their own flights and more or less just going over there for the opportunity rather than, you know, a company overseas actually drawing you in for your worth.
Right.
A lot of different stuff like that. But, all right, the Ted Petty tournaments. These have produced some of the best, you know, best tournaments that have been done in indie wrestling. Obviously, you know, the 04 tournament stands out. I mean, you look at, again, some of the top TV product right now, you look at that culminated in that tournament. You had, you know, at least 3 months of WWE pay-per-views that you had a first-round match of, second-round match of Daniel Bryan and CM Punk, or, you know, CM Punk, Bryan Danielson. Roderick Strong and Samoa Joe, where Samoa Joe was on fire at the time. Roderick Strong was dropping everybody on his knee all over the place, and you had CM Punk on commentary, and one of my favorite quotes is, Roderick Strong has freaky retard strength, but if he drops Samoa Joe on his knee, it's going to turn it into a fine powder.
Yeah.
And I laughed my ass off a million times watching that shit, and I was just like, that is just the greatest thing ever. Now you're looking at the guy who said that is the biggest name on TV. Then you have Samoa Joe and Roderick Strong, who's a solid, solid worker. I mean, AJ Styles winning the tournament. I think first round was actually AJ and Austin Aries and CM Punk, right?
Right, right.
So yeah, you had the two world champions.
Yeah.
Right there in the first round, and that was, I mean, the talent right across the board was just ridiculous. Now, how hard was it to put this all talent together on one show?
Elaborate for me what you mean by that.
Well, do you mean financially, schedule-wise, whatever it comes down to. I mean, that's a super show.
Financially, it really wasn't, you know, all that bad because, you know, Highland was bringing in, you know, probably anywhere between $7,000 and $8,000 in merchandise and concessions.
Wow.
Over that weekend. Yeah.
Okay.
So, that wasn't really the hard part. Like, the hard part of that weekend was, like, I was catching up everybody from the other shows that didn't draw so well. You know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and things like that. So, I mean, like, it was a huge success, but it really didn't net me any money because I was making up from other
shit. Sure.
You know, but, you know, I have never, ever had a problem, really, that comes to mind where I've said, you know, okay, you know, you're putting over you and, you know, gotten flack out of it, you know. Or, you know, this is, you know, what I want you to do, you know.
Not even that. But I'll get into that difficult thing in a minute. We're not going there yet. This was a successful tournament.
Right. You know, I never had any problems out of that. Even out of, you know, Austin Aries, who is notorious for, you know, not wanting to do jobs and, you know, you know, things like that. I never had any of those problems. You know, the only other tournament that really and truly I've ever been anywhere near as proud of is the tournament that Quack won.
That was another one I wanted to bring up. And I mean, he severely hurt himself during that tournament and, you know, persevered throughout that. And great fucking tournament. But in the same token, that's another guy I want to ask you about because Quack has a certain way of business and it isn't for everybody. He's kind of a very straight-laced guy, and some people I've had a lot of people on the show. Some people just call him like just a weird dude, and then some people say like no, well he's a professional and he does this or he does that. But I mean, what was your perspective on working with Quack and actually putting him over? Obviously, that performance was fantastic, but
I mean, up until that point, I mean. There was a reason why, you know, he won the tournament, won, you know, the heavyweight and the light heavyweight title, the world title and the light heavyweight title, you know, I mean, I was very impressed with Mike Quackenbush's, you know, in-ring work. You know, he never gave me any problems, you know, with, you know, what I wanted him to do or anything like that. You know, he was more of a yeah, you know, type of guy. You know, my problems with Quack, you know, came after, after that, which, you know, it's really neither here nor there when it comes to the spectrum of that tournament, because when he goes over, that was one of those moments where, you know, you just watch people react and jump up and down on their chairs and, you know, strangers hugging strangers. And, you know,
wow.
Just one of those, you know, really good, you know, feel good moments, that a lot of times isn't produced in the wrestling business. And, you know, all the way up to, you know, him coming out to, I still haven't found what I'm looking for, you know, that this was a quest of his, you know, just absolutely incredible feeling to be a part of that emotion.
Right.
Because that's one of the things that I love about professional wrestling is that emotion. You know, I'll never forget, you know, being a kid sitting in the Fort Heschler Armory the night Dusty Rhodes beat Harley Race for his first NWA World title in Tampa, Florida, and watching the ring fill up with people and, you know, just tears in people's eyes and everything like that. You know, so when you create a emotional experience like that, you know, you think, you know, damn, that's awesome. You know,
yeah.
And, you know, no matter how good, Quack is, you know, it was also the portrayal on his part of being able to go on after getting hurt, showing that he had the heart to go on. I mean, there was people with tears in their eyes when I went out there to announce that Quack had to forfeit. You know, I mean, it was, you know, one of those really, truly great emotional, you know, wrestling moments, you know, and, you know, it happened in a small building in Malofian, Illinois, you know, same thing with Drake Younger when Drake Younger wins TPI, you know, Drake Younger goes out to the ring, to wrestle the final match at the 08 TPI, thinking Claudio Castagnoli is the winner.
Drake, he told me that story. He couldn't have been more blown away by you surprising him with that. That was cool as hell.
And it was for the part of I wanted to create that emotion, you know, that we had with Quack, you know. And I knew if we got that truly surprised moment out of Drake, that it was going to be an incredible moment. And I'll never forget coming to the ring and Drake with tears rolling down his face going, Ian, why would you do this to me? You know, and, you know, but, you know, the problems with Quack is, you know, if you don't like the way, you know, he treats his students or whatever, guess what? That's between him and his students. You know, if you sign some kind of contract saying I'm going to give 20% of, you know, whatever I make to Mike Quackenbush for the rest of my career, well, that's what you do. You know, Bigelow did it with Larry Sharp. You know, Danny Davis makes people wrestle for a year for free. You know, on every OVW show that there is. You know, I don't do that with my students, but you know, that's to each is their own. You know, I mean, you know, my biggest problem with Quack is I did everything for him that I possibly could. Because, once again, I always thought Tom Carter was the talent. I always thought Reckless Youth was the talent.
Reckless Youth.
You know? And you know, for Quack, it worked out, you know, that Tom left the business. You know? But I always liked Mike, but it was seeing him versus Tom that made me like Mike. You know?
Yeah.
And, you know, I did what I could for him. You know, then the next year he no-shows me, you know, at the last minute, and you know, never returns my phone calls, anything else. I feel you're in the wrestling business. You know, if you got a problem with somebody, you know, and I call you up, and you know, and I've given you the open book. This is literally what I said on Mike Quackenbush's answer machine. I said, even if it's to tell me to go fuck myself, call me back.
Yeah.
You know? And Duke can't even give me the respect of a phone call. You know?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I'm like, you know, what's the heat here? What can I do to fix it? You know, so on and so on and so on. And never once have I gotten a phone call back from him, an email, a text message, nothing. Dude, fuck me on an airplane ticket and everything else. And, you know, has never responded to it whatsoever. You know, you know, how he treats his students is how he treats his students. How he runs his business is how he runs his business. You know, but, it's one of my favorite things that's ever said about Mike, though. And it's a quote from Devin Moore that Mike Quackenbush is a closet scumbag.
You got to say that in the voice, then. I mean,
my Quackenbush is a closet scumbag, cuz. You got to fucking know.
It's like one of my things I can do.
But, you know,
but
I will never, ever take away from the guy what a talent he is in the ring. You know.
He's great in the ring. He really is. Putting him up against Hero, classic. I mean.
Oh, yeah, those guys were tailor-made for each other. Him and Claudio were tailor-made for each other. You know,
sure.
I mean, the happiest thing I ever have out of me and Mike Quackenbush's relationship is the friendship I have with Eddie Kingston. You know, so, you know, that is one thing with Quack and his students. The guy's a damn good teacher, so you know when you do hire his students, that the baggage of Quackenbush may come along with it, but you know you're getting good, talented, respectful kids all the way through. I mean, Hollow Wicked, Jigsaw, you know, Grand Akuma, you know, Eddie, you know, Blackjack. You know, all those guys that were coming here at the time, never, you know, disrespectful, you know, always, you know, so polite, do their job. I never had any problems out of any of them.
Right. Well, I mean, talking about another TPI and another guy, and, you know, you're telling me that no one ever didn't want a job to somebody. Low key, come on.
Now,
he would not
when I told him he was putting Chuck Taylor over, he never gave me shit about it. know, I was like, Key, it's time for you to lose. You know, it would be, he would kind of scoff if you would give him an inclination that he was going to lose. You know,
right.
He wouldn't outright say, you know, no, I'm not going to. But you could tell he didn't want to do business, you know, as far as that was concerned. And then I got kind of caught up in the idea of when this guy does lose, it's going to be some shit, you know.
Yeah.
He is definitely a hard dude to deal with, but I mean, I had a confrontation with him over Drake Younger, you know, and you know he totally you know chilled out about it, you know.
Right.
You know it's one of the funniest things ever at the hotel in Plainfield. Like, he came to my hotel room and I was coming out of it going to get something to eat, and you know he apologized to me for it afterwards, and you know I kid you not, he was like, Ian, you want a hug? <You know?
laughs> Low key saying that shit is the funniest thing ever.
Yeah, and it was
you want a hug?
Hysterical. I was like, dude, we're cool. I was like, but you can't beat fucking somebody's brains in, and then because they drop you on your head, beat their brains in more. You know, I was like,
right.
it's your fucking receipt. You know,
yeah.
Like, that kid wasn't trying to hurt you. You know,
yeah.
Because you know when we got into it in the dressing room and stuff. Over Drake, like the dressing room was like, oh shit, this is gonna be a fight, you know, and you know he knew he was wrong, you know, for all of his talk of professionalism and all this other shit, you know, he knows where what's right and wrong, you know.
Yeah.
He just sometimes takes himself way too serious.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of comments of saying he doesn't know that it's actually a work.
Well, you know that's cool and all that, but you know, there's also a great saying, never work a worker. You know, so
sure.
the rest of us do. So.
Yeah. Well, you know, besides low-key or including low-key, you know, call it what it may be, who was the hardest to work with as, you know, booking a guy and having him in the locker room, whether it was just like one blowout or just a continuous thing, or who was the hardest guy to book and work with?
The guy that two people I would say that I have the most disdain for after booking them in IWA is Scott Levy, Raven, and Kid Cash.
Okay.
You know, Raven, you know, if there was such thing, Raven would be the John Holmes of the wrestling business because he's the biggest dick ever. and Kid Cash don't father for, you know, too far behind that.
Wow.
You know, you know, it's just a, you know, a question of, you know, thinking that you are much bigger than you are. You know, we probably had the most problems with New Jack, but I wasn't at the shows that the problems with New Jack occurred. The shows that I was at, that we brought New Jack in for, I never had a problem. You know, but when I was doing the Southern California Deathmatch tournament, we brought him in, and he ran us over like an hour and 45 minutes over our building time, which cost us a shitload of money. Because of being drunk and getting on the mic and not shutting up and everything else. And when Jim Fannin pulled the microphone cord on him, you know, we had a big brouhaha in the back over that.
Sure, he did.
Which is really funny because New Jack's yelling and screaming at Jim Fannin, who the fuck you think you are, and all this other stuff. And, Jim Fannin's like, I'm the motherfuckers paying you tonight, you no-talented fucking nigger. I don't know why Ian brought you in. Jack saying he's going to go get his fucking gun and shoot Jim, and Jim's going, do you think they stopped making guns when they made yours? And then, the next thing I see New Jack, he's like, that white boy buddy of yours is fucking nuts. that just goes to, show you stand up to him, he's not any bigger or better than, anyone else.
It's funny, too. Yeah, I was going to bring up quick to you about the New Jack thing, and because did like a U shoot or something, and you came up, and he was saying like, oh, I remember what the fuck was Axel's partner's name and this and that, and he's like, oh, yeah, the interviewer was like, Ian, and he's like, oh, yeah, that's the motherfucker, and I was in the back, and then this motherfucker go over to Paul Lee and say, I want more money, and he turned his hat backwards and said, you're fired, and he's like, that shit was funny. And then next thing you know, this motherfucker come up to me, tell me he invented a staple gun. And I was like, get the fuck out of my face, you non-working ass motherfucker. And then he went and started his own company because he couldn't hang. And I'm like, oh, wow, Jesus Christ. Like, New Jack is always funny to listen to, but there's only so much truth to what he's saying. It's his version of what happens. I mean.
Well, the thing is, the thing with Paul Lee that is very far from the truth, because Paul Lee said to me, "Ian, one more word out of your mouth and you're through." He didn't even say you're fired. He said you're through, and I said one more word, and I said fuck you, Paul Lee, I quit. I was beyond upset, he likes to talk about, I was crying. I was crying because I was so mad that I really wanted to hurt Paulie that night, because I'm thinking, I've got fucking gaping wounds in my body, the money's there to pay me. And you're just going to outright, fuck me,
Right.
I was just so angry, and Teddy and Johnny were trying to calm me down. They're like, you guys are going to talk in a couple of days, all this stuff. And I was like, no, fuck him, because it was just a repeat thing. People don't realize all the fucking work I did for that man. Going down to Florida, staying with relatives down there. As I said, I was a kid in Tampa, Florida. My dad moved to Florida when my parents divorced, and so I had relatives and stuff down in Florida. I was putting 15,000 flyers out by myself in Tampa.
Yeah.
15,000 flyers out in Fort Lauderdale by myself. 15,000 flyers out in Orlando by myself. I was doing everything, I could. A month before this situation happens, I get the Paul Heyman speech, that I'm like Tommy and Taz to him. So where the fuck does this lead me? When you're going to hand me a check for $350 for fucking, for 3 dates. No trans, no nothing, what's that, like, $115 a day or something, and the truth of the matter was, Paulie goes, if you can tell me how to keep this company open, and still pay you guys what you think you deserve, you let me know. One of the first words out of my mouth was, well, stop paying the Steiner brothers $1,500 a piece.
Yeah.
Because of the fact of the matter is, we were going to draw what we were drawing without Rick and Scott Steiner. They weren't fucking pumping up the houses, you know.
Sure.
When we went to New Jersey, you know, I was like the only one of the boys that went out on the boardwalk, you know, in the heat, handing out flyers and stuff. You know, I love that company. You know, I believed in Paul Lee.
Yeah.
You know, so for Paul Lee to fuck me even more upset me even more. You know.
Sure.
And you know,
what about the staple gun shit with New Jack and like who created and this and that?
Me and Pondo did that. Me and Pondo were the first ones to do the staple gun. And I did tell him that. I didn't say we invented the staple gun. I said we were the first ones to do it. And he's like,
I was in my apartment stapling some motherfucking carpet on one of my many suspensions. And then I thought of, and then this motherfucker's going to tell me. I was like, I don't know shit, dude. I don't know who did what, man. It's funny to hear from, just because he has quite a way to tell a story. And then again, I mean, you guys have all, honestly, you've put out far more to the fucking wrestling business than New Jack ever has. He's a hilarious guy to listen to, but for what you put together, especially through IWA Mid-South, he doesn't have a lot of room to talk as far as minor league,
Let me ask you a question, Jay. How well did his promotion do? Remember that little promotion he started up? How well did that do?
What promotion is that?
He started up some little promotion years ago, and it made like 2 shows.
That's great, because I never heard of it.
Right, exactly.
So, speaking of your promotion, one of my favorite matches of all time, Necro Butcher versus Samoa Joe. I've heard this on a lot of people's, you know, same people who shit on you on the internet are also bringing this match up on one of their top 10 favorite matches to watch. I was there live. It was one of the sickest fucking things I've ever seen. And it really started like a whole, you know, a spur of matches of the Styles Clash matches. And I mean, you did a few more of them yourself, but a lot of other companies were like, oh, let's mix all sorts of shit up. And really never gelled as well as this match went. Like, what, you know, went into you thinking of that match, and, you know, how did all that shit go down on your end?
Well, you know, it starts from, I guess at a Chikara show, Necro roughed up some Ring of Honor students. And
right.
Joe took some
King of Trios or
issues
something,
with that.
I think.
Right. Joe took some issues with that. In that time frame, you know, there was some people, you know, saying, Joe ever gets a hold of Necro, he's gonna kick his ass, you know, all this other stuff. So my thoughts on it were, you know, he might whoop his ass, but you know, Necro is going to be Necro still, and probably the Necro Butcher legend will grow if he does kick his ass, because it's going to be a hell of a fight, you know. And then some guy on the CZW board, I forget who it was, I think it was that Rob Neller guy. I'm not
right.
sure. Naylor. Is that his name?
Rob Naylor. Rob Naylor,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Said it on one of the CZW boards. I thought, you know, if they're buying into that on the East Coast, this is my East Coast main event for the upcoming arena show.
Sure.
You know, because believe it or not, no matter what people want to say about me, I always try to listen to the fans. You know, I've made my share of mistakes and fuck ups, but I've done more with less than anybody ever could have thought I'd done. You know, over 600 shows in IWA Mid South, and I really, really, you know, appreciate fans' insights, because, you know, what better way to judge what people want to see, you know?
Right.
And, so, But the other thing I thought is, man, this is going to give Necro a chance to show that he's not just a guy that lands in barbed wire and glass and, mm-hmm. you know, and that nature. You know, and I told Necro that, you know, before he went out the curtain at the arena, I was like, man, this is your chance, you know, to show people that you don't have to fucking land in shit every show you do. And you know, he went out there and you know yeah, he had, you know, great match with Joe and you know, Loki and you know Mr. Insanity Toby Klein had some real good matches with the guys that, you know, they say are straight technical guys. It worked out real well. I mean, it's definitely it helped me to outdraw CZW at their own building, and it definitely did its part as far as making me money on a DVD.
Yeah. Well, like I said, that match was fantastic, and then I went back and the next month I bought it on Smart Mark, and I had the DVD, and Necro was there, and I'm like, yo, fuck it, I might as well have him sign the insert, because honestly, this match was just, it blew my fucking mind. And I mean, you heard his skull hit the floor in front of me. It was right in front of me.
Yeah.
And I still am getting, like, it was like a couple of weeks ago, someone was like, hey, I was watching the video, and everyone was marking out, and you were just standing there like you didn't care. And I was like, no, it's not that I didn't care. I thought he died, and I was in awe. And I was like, I didn't know how to react to someone who just died on the floor in front of me, because I heard splat, and he got up, and there was blood just pouring from his head. And I'm like, I thought he cracked his skull. And I'm like, well, shit. So then the next month, anyway, I got the DVD, and I brought it over to him. And he pulls the insert out, and he's like, well, something to prove. Well, I hope it proved whatever it was supposed to prove. I said, what, are you fucking crazy? And he's like, yeah, just another day at the office. I'm like, all right, you work in a rough office. So,
That's where I came up with the saying, there's got to be an easier way to make a living.
Yeah. That was something else. There really was. I got a bunch of other stuff. Let me just throw out some random topics. Peter B. Beautiful.
You bring up Samoa Joe a lot, you know.
Yeah.
Joe is one of my absolute favorite guys to have in, you know. Professional, you know, a good time, you know.
Go ahead.
After the show was over, some of his stories about his brothers and Tito Ortiz and all kinds of shit like that are just some of the, you know, funniest shit that, you know, you could ever hear from a guy that, you know, looks like he could murder someone.
Mojo.
Yeah, he tells some great stories about his brothers doing fire dancing and stuff and.
That's
shit
awesome.
Dripping off the torches and stuff and melting his brother's toes together.
Jesus Christ.
Joe and Hero was one of the most surreal moments ever, I think, in IWA history, you know, with the dueling chants and everything else. I mean, I really knew how John Zandig felt at that point of the fans in CZW cheering for the IWA guys, because when the Ring of Honor fans were cheering for Joe over Hero in our place, I thought, them motherfuckers.
Yeah.
Really good guy, fun guy to be around, you know, professional, man, 2004 TPI, when Styles gets him up for that Styles Clash, you know, the only person that ain't standing in the building, and I'm not saying this to be sarcastic, the only person that's not standing in that building is a guy in a wheelchair, And that's a shoot. Incredible 15 minutes put together by, you know, Danielson, Joe, and Stiles for that finals. And Joe could have balked at putting over AJ, considering his spot at Ring of Honor at that time, but he didn't, and he did it with professionalism and did it strong,
Right. To throw out a couple, random topics, a lot of the, different little controversies and stuff like that. Peter B. Beautiful.
What about him?
What happened? I mean, you beat the living shit out of this guy a couple times. What happened?
Other than
beating the shit out of him.
Dude just was drizzling shits. He wouldn't listen. He wouldn't sell. I worked him over, up in Mid-America a couple times and,
MAW thing, right?
Yeah, right. And
the MAW is like not far from where the tournament, King of the Death was, right? It was like a week or two apart.
Well, one's in Milwaukee and one's in Southern Indiana, but yeah, they were.
No, but I mean, timeline wise, like.
Oh, yeah. I killed him on Friday and then wrestled him again on Saturday.
Fuck.
I mean, not on Saturday, on Sunday, excuse me. I just wrestled him for his own group up in Upper Michigan, in the peninsula. And he's gotten a lot better. We had a really good, entertaining match. The people liked it, and he's learned to wash his gear, and he was never hurt. Wasn't like that. He couldn't go and make money, or anything like that. It's just like people say I took liberties with dysfunction, I never took liberties with dysfunction. I called everything that was going on to dysfunction,
Right.
I asked dysfunction over a year ago. I said if at all you thought I was beating you up, would you tell me? And he was like, you were beating me up. He was like, you were tight. He goes, if we were to do it all over again with the way the angle was supposed to be and stuff, he goes, I'd fight back a little bit more. He goes, but you didn't beat me up.
Right.
People shit on my work and shit on me as a person and everything else. But what's one of the things that amazes me is, I'm such a shitty worker, but I got you believing I'm shooting on somebody when I'm not, that's the art of working, I told Peter B, I'm glad that, you took your lessons learned, and learn something from it and became a better wrestler, he's not Dean Malenko, but the dude does, good deathmatch stuff,
As far as what you said, dysfunction and stuff, the first time I saw dysfunction, I think, was up against Nick Gage that you put him up against. And, I think it was the King of the Death or something. And I was
'03,
like, Nick Gage just broke his fucking face off. I'm like, this guy just kicked him like he didn't give a shit about his life. And then I later realized that, dysfunction is just, he puts fucking guys over with his, tolerance for punishment or whatever you want to call it. Dude is a very, very good fucking, guy for putting guys over and making people look good.
Well, I've known Kirk since he was, 17 years old,
Right.
And you know, when I first started wrestling him up in, you know, Carmine Espirito's Mid-American up there in Milwaukee. And, you know, as of late, you know, we've had some controversies or whatever, you know, but I'll still say this about the guy, you know, the kid's an excellent deathmatch worker. He's more than adequate, you know, regular wrestler. And,
right.
And he knows, you know, he knows how to work. He knows how to sell. He knows how to give the people what they want, you know,
mm-hmm.
You know, and he's learned that through you know, however many years he's been in the business. But, you know, one of those things that he's really good at is putting people over. And the reason why he's good at that is because, you know, he worked for me for that, with me for that long. You know?
Right.
Because, you know, man, one time up in Milwaukee, I was working him, and, you know, I thought his dad was going to want to kill me. You know?
Yeah.
You know, and you know, it was, you know, how good he was selling and you know, putting me over that, you know, his dad believed his kid was getting killed. So,
yeah.
He's a good man. I highly suggest to anybody that, wants a good deathmatch guy that can, you know, wrestle as well, you know, he's a damn good guy to get in there also.
Sure. The incident, or, you know, not even incident, well, sort of, but Z-Bar. What's your thoughts on that guy? Probably, I think he's a cunt as a person. I've had some personal shit with him. But other than that, like, I haven't seen fans completely more or less leave the ring area for a match up until...
That was a great rib. Was that not a great rib or what?
When you
need a whole audience to participate in a rib.
He was fucking heated. Oh, he was heated.
You guys are assholes.
He was mad as hell.
You know, the thing
stuff.
About Sparks, he's just so easy to fuck with. You know,
yeah.
that's what, you know, if you make yourself that vulnerable in the wrestling business, you're going to get fucked with. That's all there is to it. You know,
yeah.
That's just the way it is. You know?
Mm-hmm.
It was pretty funny.
Yeah, definitely. Mike Levy, that incident.
Well, you know, the whole story of this is, you know, everybody was like, oh, what was the angle, you know, if it was supposedly this and that. The thing was, Corporal Robinson didn't make the tournament because he was on the road with the Clowns. And
okay.
So the deal with Levy was supposed to be, you know, you mess with one of us, you mess with all of us, you know, type deal. You know?
Right.
And that was, you know, it was supposed to be, you know, okay, Corp, where were you? You know, oh, you were out with the painted up fags, you know, out on the road, you know, whatever, you know, type deal, you know.
Right.
Because they do the, you know, whole family shit too, you know.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
You know, so the end-all be-all of it was Burns begged me not to involve the Clowns in the angle, okay?
Right.
So with Levy, he was told, look, you're going to get the shit kicked out of you. You're not getting any offense in. You know, this is what it is. You know, then when he chose to take offense on Mickey, and he wasn't doing, you know, things that he should have been doing, you know, Devin and Tank both said, can we hit the ring on him? You know, and
yeah.
I said, yeah, go ahead. You know, and you can tell, though, that it's stiff. It still worked wrestling moves. And,
right, right.
You know,
So it was. Well, I know, you know, he still made night two. I mean, he still hung out, or it was, I think, doubleheader that day, so he still stayed for it and everything.
It was very, you know, brutal looking and all that stuff. But, you know, the funniest thing is the people that are forgiven in this, you know, and I know people get pissed off because, you know, my kid got involved, which he got severely grounded for because I didn't even know where the fuck he came from in the situation, to be honest with you.
So that was not put over by you. Like, you didn't set that up at all.
Right. You know, no, okay. not at all.
No, because that's popular opinion is like, oh, then Ian sent his kid to go hit him. Like, so,
right.
No. Good other side
like,
to the story.
I was like, John Calvin, what the fuck were you doing out there? You know? Then when I get angry is when I notice her face. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm like, oh, fuck, she's got fucking TV, you know, coming up this week.
Yeah, she had TNA shit going on, yeah.
Right. And to my surprise, when she got there and her fucking face is all deformed and shit, and that's been, we had been putting ice pack after ice pack on it and fucking, you know, because, and, you know, and everybody tries to blame Mickey for that spot. You know, if I were to sit down with you and watch the tape with you, I can show you where he puts that knot on her.
I think that it's a misconception that, like, people didn't know that he was planned to get no offense. That when it comes down to, like, oh, he got stiff at her, like, she's pretty stiff herself. That was, like, the honest, like, fan's perspective. It's like, she wasn't light on that dude neither, like.
Right.
So that was the thing, but no, I mean from what you're saying is, you know, I hear you.
He was told he was getting absolutely no offense.
Right.
I mean, and anybody doesn't believe me, everybody knows that Mike Burns may be an asshole, but he's a fucking straight up guy. Mike Burns will tell you he was sitting in the dressing room. You know, he was a part of the booking decision to make put Mike Levy into that. That Mike Levy was told everything. You know,
right?
Then I did get upset with them over the knot. But little did I know she was going to go to TNA, and Jeff Jarrett thought it was the greatest thing in the world. You know, because it looked like she had been in a fight. You know, and a lot of people don't realize this, but you know, their plan for Mickey was to make her like a female Mankind. That's what they wanted to. You know,
what she could have done, yeah.
You know, could have done, you know, and it's the same shit. I get blamed, you know, for, you know, her jumping off a 3.5-foot stage, you know, and breaking her leg that she shouldn't have been doing that. Well, it's the same thing as if she goes off of a ring apron and does that, you know.
Right.
The doctor said her breaking her thigh bone was the equivalent of a perfect storm because that bone is so strong, especially of a person of her age. Because if you watch the week before at TNA, she takes a shopping cart right to the thigh bone during one of them bimbo brawls. And the doctor's opinion was there had to be some kind of hairline fracture there or something of that leg in order for it to break the way it did from just that little jump.
Yeah.
You know,
very well could have been.
You know, just because she was wrestling in TNA doesn't mean she stops wrestling, you know, elsewhere or IWA or anything like that. You know, that's absolutely ridiculous, you know?
Yeah.
You know, it, and people that, you know, think they, you know, that there was something up with Mike Levy, that we were out to hurt him and stuff like that. If Tank wanted to hurt him, he certainly wouldn't have took all of his weight off of him on that stump off the second. You know,
right?
I mean, to say
that as far as like what you're saying about the, you know, he wasn't supposed to get any offense. I mean, it's not a
a matter of Mickey can't take offense. I mean, I've seen live the bang out brawls that, she had that match with Insane Lane in the ECW arena. She had countless things that I've seen on DVD and tape with you. And I know that she can go with the best of them, but that wasn't what was planned that day. She had TV the next week. It was just, not lined up for that to happen that day. So I hear what you're saying.
And the whole thing as far as, that was concerned was, but the original angle was supposed to be JCW versus IWA. And because PWU had so much problem with the clowns, and Burns was a part of that situation when that happened, that he begged me. He was like, please don't fucking do anything with them. Please don't do anything with them.
Mm-hmm.
So then it just got totally scrapped that, he was the get no offense, and then we felt that he went into business for himself and, deserved to get roughed up a little bit,
All right.
It's pro wrestling. The wrestling fans are becoming way too namby-pamby in, their opinion of the way our business is supposed to be, is absolutely getting ridiculous. Just like, people, there's no reason why a wrestler should ever put his hands on a fan. Well, there's no reason why a fan should ever put their hands on a wrestler.
Right. A lot of that is going that way with society. I comment on a regular basis of what's going on with comedians. Like, these comedians have to completely apologize on a every other week basis for, like, oh, I'm sorry, I offended this group. Like, holy shit, dude. Like, it's entertainment. I don't understand at all. But, it is what it is.
Whatever happened to politically incorrect, and we don't give a shit.
Right. Just entertain at any cost. And some people like it, some won't, filter it out. Figure out what you like and start attending, or tuning in, whatever. So speaking of PWU, what was your thoughts on that whole project and Johnny Cashmere starting his own thing and breaking off and going to war with Zandig while telling everybody he's not in war with Zandig the entire time? And involved you as well. And
man, my whole thought of it is I picked up good paydays.
Okay. Yeah.
I got to go home to Baltimore, visit my family. I picked up good paydays. Him and Ty kind of royally fucked me on that last show. And, I look at it more, as Cashmere did it, considering Cashmere wasn't even at the building, the shit that was going on, then, but they tossed the heat back and forth, it is what it is. It's independent wrestling, I still went home and saw my family would Johnny Cashmere be my first choice to go work for? No, not really. I don't understand, about people, just air everything out on Facebook and, all this other shit, this and that happened, It used to be a time that, wrestlers policed themselves, and now in the world of, on the street is, snitches must die. Professional wrestling business, it's, the more you can snitch, the better the fans will love you.
Something I did want to ask you about that, I could just go ahead and cross off the list and bring it up now is, we talked about a lot of what you were doing early on was tape trading and was tape trading and was tape trading, just word of mouth and that type of thing. How much has the internet affecting the wrestling business as far as what you've been involved with?
I mean, it's great for, you know, if you put on a good product and, you know, people want to go, you know, see things, there's so many really, you know, awesome fans out there, you know,
sure.
You know, that spend a lot of their money, you know, their vacation days, you know, all kinds of stuff to be an independent wrestling fan. And, you know, but there's also the people, and these are the same people that, you know, call me a scumbag and a piece of shit and all that stuff, that are out there, you know, going to these pirate sites, you know, stealing DVDs, you know, downloading DVDs, but yet they're the same people that say that they love independent wrestling. You know,
right.
You can't have it both ways. You know, if I can't afford to put gasoline in my car, and I think the gasoline price is too high, it doesn't mean that I go out and steal the gasoline. You know, you just don't drive.
Sure.
You know, if the guy you buy your weed from price goes up, you know, you just don't buy from them. You know, you have to say, well, I can't afford the product. You know, but you know they go out and steal it and then they download it and you know and on and on. And, you know, they can say, oh, they don't care that they're hurting a piece of shit like me. But they're not just hurting me. They don't realize, you know, at one point I was, you know, one of the top companies for Smart Mark. So when you take, you know, that money away from Smart Mark, you're also taking their abilities away to upgrade their cameras, upgrade their technology, you know, so they can do, you know, other independent groups that you want to see, you know. But then they want to bitch about the quality of the camera work. They want to bitch about, you know, it's like, you know, go back to you know, buying DVDs, buying tickets, you know, sit in the crowd. Give a, you know, constructive criticism of what you saw, you know, what you didn't like, what you do like, because, you know, we all armchair quarterback, whether, you know, it's our favorite football team, baseball team, whatever, you know, pro wrestling, you know, everybody does that, you know. But nowadays it just seems like the internet is full of people that just want to bitch and moan and bitch and moan. And it wasn't
sure.
That way from 2003 to, you know, 2006 or 7, you know,
right.
It's just,
and,
you know,
I mean, just to play devil's advocate for a minute and just, you know, put this out there though. Now tape trading, it was, you know, a free source for you to watch something that you haven't seen before that maybe you weren't willing to pay for yet. You know, because, hey, well, I haven't seen that. Oh, well, you got it. Well, I'll give it a look. And then next thing you know, they're turned on to that product.
That's trading, though, Jay. That's taking something of yours that you already have, and you send it to the other person, and they send what you want to see to you. That's trading. It was purchased. That's not stealing. You know, you're trading one thing for another. When you go to these pirate sites and stuff, and whether it's CZW, IWA, Ring of Honor, you know, any of them, and then, you know, you're helping to hurt the money source coming into these companies, and then you want to bitch about the quality of the talent that's on the cards. Where do you think this money comes from?
Right.
You know, it has to be generated, you know, in other places. You know, it's just not revenue from you know, putting asses in the seats.
Yeah. No, I do understand there's a balance between the two things, but there are certain extents where it may be somewhat of a tape trading from California to Florida, which is probably something that would never ever happen before, and it's like, hey, you know, I'll send you this, and maybe it's not direct, here's a tape for a tape, but it's like, oh yeah, you never seen that, okay, bam, and it's like, oh wow, that guy's awesome, and now it becomes a thing. Not saying it's good for the wrestling business overall, but it's just kind of the new wave of things going on the internet, and I don't know. I mean, there's pluses and minuses, because there's probably people from Florida that never heard of talent from California until the internet made it aware. I'm not the guy that brings in any money, so I surely can't just promote it or anything like that, but I could see how word spreads easier with the internet, you know?
You know, that's like making a statement of, hey, have you seen this movie? Well, I'll burn you a copy of it and send it to you.
Now the movies are across the country already.
I know, but it's still a question of going to see it. You know,
yeah.
I mean, I understand your point from exposure. You know,
yeah, that's smart. That's what I'm saying. Like
exposure to the product, but it's still piracy. It's
sure.
Still,
I understand that.
You know. Unless you're sending your copy, you know, you're sacrificing your copy, the for the deal, you know, if you're burning copies or getting it off the internet, you know, you're taking, you know, out of, you know, everyone's mouths, you know, all together from Smart Mark, the wrestlers, the buildings, you know.
Sure.
All the way down the line, you want better quality, you know, wrestling shows. You have to support them. You know, do you think if tomorrow Vince's product were to go down the shitter, you know, would you be getting better talent? No. You would be getting lesser talent, sort of like there is now, while he's in the rebuilding stages of getting the numbers to what they once were. You know,
right.
I mean, dude, Raw used to be the best advertisement an independent company could ever have.
Sure.
You know, you put a 30-second commercial on Raw, and you know, it was your 30-second TV spot. You know. But you knew, you know, so many people were watching this show, you know, and now you have to guess, is anybody watching this? What's the numbers here, there, fuck TNA, is anybody watching that? You know, I mean,
right.
The couple times I've watched that, you know, I thought I'm never getting this time of my life back. you still have to say, if you're a fan, you know, you're a fan, you know.
Yeah.
If somebody's a fan of Sons of Anarchy, you know, you go out and you buy the DVDs. You go out and you don't go to the flea market and get the shirt from the guy making that money. You go out and you get the shirt from, you know, Kirk Sutter, who's, you know, put the thing together, made the product for you to enjoy. That's how you reward him for giving you something that entertains you. You know, if you're going to go out and show that swag, you know, get the real swag. You know,
that's
what I'm saying. You know,
okay.
Because
no, I hear you.
You know, this guy gets tired enough of people ripping off his shit and just says, "Fuck it, I ain't making no more good TV." You know, and you know, then what do all of us do at Tuesday nights at 10 o'clock? You know.
Yeah, no, I hear you. What's one of the craziest situations you've had, like, you know, running shows, like just incident wise within the locker room or, you know, just on the show overall?
I would probably have to say Tracy losing his fucking mind on the one show when the fan hit him with one of the weapons from the fans bring the weapons.
Oh, shit.
You know, that was kind of as real as it gets. and then some. And Tracy's an old timer, but you know, he's a bad man majama too. You know, so you know, at that time period, you know, I'm thinking, how do I diffuse this situation? Well, I'll make it look like an angle. You know?
Yeah.
So, you know, you empty out the dressing rooms and, you know, do all that, you know, and try to make the people think, oh, this is just one big work, you know. So, you know, yeah, that was absolutely insane situation.
What's your thoughts on Gabe overall? I mean, I know you had, you know, some dealings with him back and forth talent-wise back in the day, and, you know, now he's running Evolve, Dragon Gate. What's your thoughts on Gabe?
You know, dude thinks he's God's gift to wrestling, you know, which, you know, you can be with other people's money. God only knows, you know, how much money he you know, lost Kerry Salkin, you know.
Right.
And you know, really, you know, not that, you know, the dude's the greatest guy in the world or anything like that, but, you know, I have a strong suspicion that, you know, he got his spot in Ring of Honor, you know, by helping to set up others for fall in you know, in early on Ring of Honor.
Yeah.
I truly believe that. I mean, who benefited from that more? You know?
From what?
Who benefited from the Feinstein Sting thing more?
Oh, well, there's that. There's so many things that cries controversy as far as Gabe goes. I mean, again, I know you don't want to put Zandig over, but every time he worked with CZW, he walked away with their talent that no longer worked for CZW. And then now, he did that.
Let me,
go ahead.
Let me tell you this statement. So, Ring of Honor, every year, runs shows in the city that WrestleMania runs in.
Right.
You know, and Gabe has the audacity to say to me the one year that he isn't going to let his talent, which is guys that worked for me first anyway,
of course.
Work for me, because he's not going to let me piggyback off of them.
Right.
And I thought, you arrogant, cocky motherfucker, you know. You watch my DVDs, you know, you do whatever you can, you know, to take my talent, and, you know, I'm happy for that. So many people don't realize, I work around so much shit. During our heyday, I was working around Ring of Honor dates, I was working around CZW dates, I was working around Chikara dates, to try to make sure that the people were getting their favorites on every shows, you know, and it is because of the fact that I'm the least paying of those groups, you know, to those guys, with the exception of maybe Chikara, you know, but, you know, you know, it's like, you know, this guy kills me with his, you know, I am, you know, he feels like he's so almighty, you know.
Yeah, I mean, he sure does, you know. Man. And it's funny because now it's becoming full circle, because he messed with CZW on that whole thing. eventually Xander was like, I want this motherfucker away from me at all times. Get him the fuck away from my locker room. If you work for him, you don't work for me. Like, he got into that whole, like, company rivalry stuff. And then now, as soon as DJ got the company, he's like, oh, I love Gabe. Come on over, Gabe. And Gabe's done nothing but the same exact shit since he got there. I was like, oh, fuck, dude. Someone needs to learn.
You know, and, you know, and there's DJ's guys that try to tell him that. You know, I'm not going to say who those guys are, you know, because I don't want them getting heat. But, you know, there's plenty of guys that try to tell DJ that, and, you know, he's a little stubborn, you know.
Yeah. What's your thoughts of DJ as an owner? Because obviously, you know, you knew him as just a guy, and then it became, well, now he owns a company, and I've seen a lot of, you know, opinions one way or the other, and I have mine, but I mean, you know, what's your thoughts on him as an owner?
You know, I like DJ as a person. You know, I stayed at DJ's house, which I've always, you know, been grateful to him for opening up his home to me. You know, we've had conversations of you know, the way the guys act, the way the guys do things. You know, I think eventually he's going to be all right, but, you know, he's going to go through his growing pains. You know, he's going to understand, you know, that, no good relationship ends well, you know, and, he has to understand, you know, sometimes it's good to be the boss and be the strong
right.
boss, but other times you got to be the guy that you wrap your arm around that guy and say, you know, you're my boy. I'm going to do what I can for you. You know?
Right.
And reinvest in that talent, that insurance, that, you know, I'm grateful for what you do for me, and I'm going to do everything I can for you. And, you know, some of his guys, I truly believe, are already losing that faith. And, you know, if he truly lets Matt Tremont go, angle, you know, shoot otherwise, and doesn't take tremendous care of that kid, he's not as smart as I give him credit for.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Yeah, that guy is killing himself for that company.
He kills himself anywhere he goes. You know.
Yeah. And a class act on top of it.
You know, I see so much of JC's heart in him that.
Wow.
That the last time I worked Tremont, it like almost brought me to tears, you know, because the promoter in me said, oh my God, if JC Bailey was alive today, this match. Holy
yeah.
shit. You know, do you imagine Bailey versus Tremont? You know,
awesome stuff.
Right. You know, it's the stuff that makes, you know, hardcore wrestling fans, ultra violent wrestling fans, you know, fucking dreams come true. You know, it's just in DJ's better interest to, in my belief, to jump on that kid's coattails, you know, and ride it as far as he can.
Well, he has as far as booking himself against a guy, you know, five times, but other than that.
That ain't what I mean.
I get it. But go on another random before I ask you another. What's the worst in-ring injury you've ever seen? Was it the Mitch Page thing? Was it the Necro arm thing? Me, as far as like your company went, it was definitely Mitch Page. That shit was
Mitch Page
scary.
Was way scarier than Necro's because
right.
I was Necro wasn't going to bleed to death. I just knew Necro was going to need a lot of stitches.
Yeah.
You know, when I got to the hospital some 2 hours later after Mitch had been taken away in ambulance, you know, they were still cleaning the blood out of the back, you know.
Wow.
When I got there. I mean, it literally looked like a river. You know?
Yeah, that was a lot of blood.
Yeah. And, you know, if we wouldn't have put ice packs on his carotid arteries to slow down the flow of the blood, he'd have bled to death. So, I mean, you know, the thing with Nikki obviously scared the shit out of me because I got secondhand news of it, you know.
They were gay.
Yeah. You know,
yeah, oh yeah. I was there.
You know.
Real shock.
You know, like I said, Necro's was bad. Mickey's leg was fucking awful, man. I mean, when Jim Fannin motioned to me across the building to come, you know, I literally was like, you know, that looked so simple. What the fuck could have went wrong? You know, and when I got there and her leg was facing the other way, you know, that was probably the roughest thing on me because, you know, of the situation of me and her then, you know.
Yeah, you're really close with her too, so it wasn't just the worker.
Yeah, beyond the other shit, you know, student teacher, you know, that was just, you know. The situation of where her career was at then, I mean,
sure.
Making that phone call to fucking Terry Taylor the next morning was just heart wrenching to me.
Right.
You know, so that was probably the most emotional, you know, involvement I've had in. Injury like that. One of the grossest things that has never been put out is there's a guy named Ox Harley wrestled early IWA, and he's a big dude. And we were wrestling one time, and he told me he was going to do a moonsault from the top rope to the floor, and he wanted me to move out of the way. And I said, what? And he said, I want you to move out of the way. I said, well, where the fuck are you going to land? He said, I'm going to make it to the chairs. I said, okay. You know? So I figured he had done it before, you know? And so I moved out of the way. And, well, he did make it to the front row, but only like his knees. And... So his knees hit the front row, slamming him face first down in the concrete.
Oh, fuck.
And when he lands, he puts out his hand to protect his face from hitting the concrete, and it basically shoots his elbow to the other side of his arm. So the bone was on the inside of his arm instead of on the outside.
One of those skateboarding injuries.
Yeah, and... When I picked him up off the ground and just saw his elbow sticking out the other side, I was like, oh, fuck, that's,
yeah. That's brutal stuff, too. Man. Have you ever had any, you know, I don't know, whether, I don't really think interactions because you guys weren't really working towards, you know, or near each other, but you have any knowledge or opinions on Frank Goodman as a promoter?
I mean, I worked for him that one time, you know.
You did?
For that Candido show.
Okay.
Other than, you know, he makes, you know, my shows look like they go by quick, you know.
yeah, he runs marathons,
from what I understand, you know.
Yeah.
You know. guy seems like he's a pretty good guy, you know.
I beg to differ, but it's good you take the high road.
I'm just saying, I really don't have I only have one I guess you would say experience with him, you know.
Okay, I understand that. You can't speak on anything that hasn't happened to you.
Right, you know, never done nothing wrong to me type of deal, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, my thing with the guy, and again, I'm just a fan, but I mean, he says the shit out of his own mouth. Like, he more or less wants everyone to pay for the show, otherwise he's not willing to work it. He's probably near 50, and he just got an actual shoot job for the first time ever, like maybe 4 years ago, something like that. And, like, has, like, an enormous house and does really well for himself. But it's all off of indie wrestling. And he's convinced himself that everybody just selling tickets for him is the best way of things. And there's guys that, you know, they started out, maybe they were selling tickets from him early. And his opinion on, hey, will you pay your dues? Yeah, I get it. I understand where you're going. But then 5 years later when they've worked, like, halfway across the country and back – and he's like, no, dude, you're a ticket seller. You still, you know, what do you mean? I don't pay you that money. And it's just like he openly tells people this, like, on the radio and stuff. And it's just like, man, like, he just doesn't have any appreciation for the actual business. He was actually going to run a reunion show over here in Jersey recently. And there's a lot of indie workers like, oh, man, I can't wait for Frank to run another, like, a USA Pro show again. And he was like, yeah, I had, like, said it on the radio. He's like, I had $8,000 worth of tickets sold from ticket sellers, and then they didn't give me my money, so I'm not willing to do it if I got to pay for it, so fuck them. And that's the thing, like, I know a lot of people have said a lot of negative things about you, but here's the thing where I have a lot of respect for you, because you put across a lot of things that are, to me, very, very valuable to the fans of the independent wrestling business. You're not a rich man. You know, people want to, you know, freak out on your shoot job, and they want to try to, you know, get on you about, oh, he's got a job. But a guy like that.
Well, let me explain something to you about that shoot job thing. Okay.
Okay.
If you work someplace and you make, you know, $40,000 a year, let's just say that. Okay.
Right.
And, you run wrestling also, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And you just go, well, I need off this date, I need off this date, I need this date off, I need this date off. You know how quickly you're going to have that $40,000 a year job?
Not for long.
Right. So, but if you work at Taco Bell to make enough money to make your bills paid off, you know, take care of what needs to be taken care of, you know, and, you know, I say, hey, I need next Friday, Saturday, and Sunday off because I have a show 5.5 hours away and I need a day to travel and a day to get back.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, can you work Monday through Thursday and do 4 10-hour days? Yeah, sure. Okay. They're a lot easier to get the bend than a job that is, you know, not so flexible.
Right. No.
So,
and I don't think there's any shame in that. And honestly, I think it takes a more humble dude to do that and just do what he has to do to survive, rather than a guy that's like, I've never had to work a day in my life because shit, I've done it off the wrestling business. I have just short of a mansion. I go to Disney World every single day with my kids, and yeah, that's great for your life. But I have a feeling like, not a lot of people made a lot of money off of you. And I don't think that, you know, you in comparison have such a cush life where people have a ton of bad shit to say about you, you know?
Well, trust me, I greatly appreciate that you get that. But unfortunately, you know, me and, you know, since, you know, I started running wrestling shows, you know, it seems like, you know, people have thought, you know, I'm rich, you know, they don't realize, you know, how many times it was, and my grandmother's no longer alive. It was, you know, a phone call to my grandmother. Hey, Grandma, I need $4,000. You know,
right?
Can you take it out of my inheritance? You know, so when my grandmother died, I got like nothing. You know,
right?
Because I had spent it all on wrestling. You know.
Yeah.
But me and my wife Patty used to joke. You know, from the very beginning. You know, when we were in that 16x80 trailer, you know, we used to have to duct tape the bottom of our bathtub together because of having so many big guys in our shower, you know.
And, we didn't hold water anymore.
Right, but we used to say that if you pulled the duct tape back, that was the hole to the mansion underneath the 16x80 trailer.
Oh, wow.
You know, that we were all staying in, you know, that we were keeping the boys in the trailer, you know. And then... You know, it's really silly that, you know, people think anybody's really getting rich off of independent wrestling without doing that, without having, a 15 match card, you know, with 20 guys on the card selling tickets, you know.
Right.
It ain't gonna happen. You know, I've tried to do that a couple times, and I'm just being honest with you, and I get so frustrated with the quality of the product, you know, it just feels like I'm banging my head against concrete, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it pains me to put somebody on a show because they can sell 10 tickets. You know,
no, I hear you.
You know, but you know, being honest with you, you know, I don't know, many guys that, you know, I don't think if you ask DJ, hey, are you making a ton of money? DJ would go, yeah, you know, I'm rolling in it, you know.
Right.
I don't think if you know,
well, DJ kayfabe's everything, so he's just like, we're an enterprise and we do quite well for ourselves. That's pretty much what he'd probably tell me.
Yeah, well,
CCW Incorporated does. Like, okay, dude, stop it. But
well, you know,
not,
I mean,
hear what you're saying.
That's his business, and that's how he, you know, it's like after, you know, I did the thing with Vito Tomaselli for the end of rotation thing, you know.
Yeah.
One dude made the comment of, like, why are we so interested in this dude's personal life? You know, and I still ain't figured that out. You know, why
yeah.
You know, what makes people want to know, you know, who I'm sleeping with, when I'm sleeping with them, you know, fucking... you know,
well, you weren't keeping that very secret neither, so, you know, just saying.
Well, I mean,
eventually you got to crack when they keep asking.
Right. Yeah, you know, but the thing was, I kept that very secret until I confessed to my wife about it.
Sure.
It was kept very secret until I finally cracked under the pressure of, you know, 5 years of that, you know, and, you know, cause, you know, the whole thing I'm trying to get to is, you know, I don't know what about me makes it so interesting, to other people of how I do things. You know, I've been accused of being a drug dealer. I've been accused of, having some kind of, you know, drug syndicate thing going on. The finance shows. I've been accused. People act like I've never paid a wrestler ever. You know.
Yeah.
You know. I admit. You know. I have fucked up, But, you know, not once when I was a wrestling fan did I ever think, is Reggie Parks getting paid tonight? You know.
Right.
You know what I mean? You know,
yeah.
How much money does Hulk Hogan make? You know,
right.
I never did that. You know,
A couple things I gotta say about that. Now, one thing is, now, do you think that, you know, your mind for wrestling and, you know, your let me make the best show possible sometimes outdoes the ability to obtain the money to pay the talent? Is that like what it is? Like,
oh yeah,
you
like
over...
I said, my biggest mistake I ever made was trying to play keeping up with the Joneses. You
right.
know, I the biggest mistake I ever made was trying to keep up with Ring of Honor. Once mm-hmm. I went to the more technical style and then mixing in the deathmatch stuff, kind of at the end,
costly.
That was my fuck up. You know, was you know I. You know, because I was just turning over from month to month. You know, Burns would pay me for the DVDs, and it would go right back out the you know, pay the guys, buildings, whatever. You know,
mm-hmm.
so I really wasn't having any personal income come in.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I mean, you know, it's a you know. It's a very doggy dog, you know, situation. But yeah, I admit to the mistake that you know, keeping up with the Joneses is the biggest mistake I made.
Sure. Now, you know, I got a few more questions too, but I do want to put this out there. The reason why, see, I had so many people come on my show probably roughly a year ago or so. And say nothing but terrible shit about you. I've also had a whole lot of people come on and say nothing but good stuff about you. But here's my thing. Like, you don't owe me a dime. So without me actually having done business with you, that's their problem with you. That's not something that I could, you know, converse to. I'm really mad at that guy now because I'm friends with someone who doesn't like him. Like, dude, what does that have to do with me? So... that's why, like, I can step back as a wrestling fan and say, you know what, like, oh, man, like, he provided such fucking great entertainment for me. That knowledge is something that I want to, you know, take in a little bit. I want to hear a little bit of that. And, of course, I have other people. This is why I kept this whole thing a secret for the entire time, because I do have people that will just fucking email me and call me all week. Let me fucking at them. Like, dude, it's been done. I'm not interested. I wouldn't have even contacted you if that was my agenda, because there's no point in it. And,
dude, you know, the thing is, you know, about that whole fiasco a year ago or whatever it was.
Yeah.
If I hang up, I'm covering things up. Okay. If any of the things I admitted to on there, you know, if I chose to cover them up, I wouldn't admit it to them. You know, I came clean as clean can be. But
sure.
But
how much money do you owe Jerry Wiseman?
I don't owe Jerry Wiseman a dime.
Right. So why is he such a superstar for putting that show on?
Because you know, I guess you know. You know, his friendship with Bull Payne, I guess. You know.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess that's what it is.
And I guess that, you know, that's along the lines of, you know,
I say superstar very lightly. I'm not.
I understand that. You know, but you know, everybody said, why didn't you just hang up? Well,
yeah.
If I hang up, then I'm covering up something. You know, people should have known from the start when I admitted to the shittiest things that I've ever done. You know, then I'm coming clean on things that, you know, I'm not fucking lying about nothing. You know, I'm
right.
You know, and anybody that knows my wife knows I'm not saying I had an affair that I didn't have. You know,
yeah.
you know, I mean, essentially, I get to see my little boy on the weekends now,
sure.
because of that affair, you know, and instead of having him in my life all the time, you know, and that along with, I don't have a friendship with Jim Fannin anymore, is probably, you know, two of the biggest things that I have ever lost, you know, because, no matter what people want to say about Jim Fannin is they wish they had a friend that was as loyal as Jim Fannin was to me, you know, those kind of friends don't come along all that too often. And I was the one that fucked that up, you know? The end all be of it is, you know, I could go around and I could air everybody's dirty laundry, and trust me, there's dirty laundry out there to air, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. You know, but that's not me, you know. I was taught by Axelrod, and the best way to keep to learn in the wrestling business is to keep your ears open and your mouth shut, you know.
Yeah.
And you know, for one payday, Bull Payne wants to forget about the other 250 paydays I gave him, you know.
Sure.
So that lets me know another lesson that Axelrod taught me is very few times in the wrestling business where you have true friends, you know, because I thought this guy was my friend enough to, you know, to be my oldest son's godfather, you know, that occurs in the wrestling business. When you have egos the size that you deal with in the wrestling business, people get butthurt real quick, you know.
Sure.
And that's what's so funny about when people say, you know, Ian Rotten, he's such an egotistical motherfucker and all this stuff. Well, let me tell you something. An egotistical motherfucker don't work 55 hours a week at Taco Bell. You know, that doesn't occur. You know, I've done what I've done, but I want people to recognize, you know, you want to call me a scumbag, that's great. I'm not the only scumbag in the wrestling business. Get the fuck off of me, you know. I have contributed more to wrestling than the other scumbags with me in the wrestling business, you know.
I would say so. Michael Pancos,
who was one of the nicest people in the wrestling business, got thrown down a flight of stairs by John Zandig. John Zandig is a god, you know. Like I said, that show I was at, John Zandig grabbed his kid by the throat, pulls him out of the crowd because he thinks he's videotaping, you know. But he is a god, you know. Gabe does everything he can to keep his wrestlers underneath of a thumbnail of his, you know. But Gabe is a wrestling god, not only amongst the fans, but in his own mind, you know.
Sure.
I
know wrestlers to call him God, and they're being sarcastic, but they're like, oh, God, thanks.
Cornette slaps the shit out of Santino Marella. You know, of course, it got him fired, you know, but, you know, if I would have done something like that, you know, because somebody fucked up my angle or putting over, you know, the boogeyman or whatever the shit it was, you know, it would have been, all over the place.
Sure.
You know, I come from a different time in the wrestling business, you know.
Sure.
And even in the short 22 years that I've been in the wrestling business has changed so much from the time period that I was in it. You know, when I got brought in the wrestling business, I got the shit kicked out of me by 10 guys, you know, to get into the wrestling business. I didn't just hand somebody a check, you know,
yep.
and get to come in. So, you know, in my mind, I feel sometimes an ass whipping is appropriate, you know, and,
yeah.
you know,
and I don't understand what, you know, I hate that term smart marks or smart fans, because most quote unquote smart marks do more things to hurt the business than they ever do to help. You know, that was the great thing about the ECW Arena fans. You know, you had guys like Sign Guy and John the Hat Guy, you know, and stuff. You know, they were the same guys. You know, they went along with what they knew Paulie's angles were. They booed the heels, they cheered the baby faces. You know,
sure.
You know, that's a smart mark. A smart mark helps the promotion. A smart mark don't hinder a booker's promotion. You know, they just don't do it. You know,
I think things have evolved, and people being more interested because they've gotten more into it, and the internet and everything else has gotten people more close to it. And then, you know, obviously wrestlers who were disgruntled and telling the real deal on here and there, they go, oh, well, I like that guy. Well, shit, then I feel how he feels. And, you know, I think a lot of it just goes hand in hand, but, you know.
But like I'm saying, I'm Dusty
Rhodes. I hear where you're coming
from.
I'm not saying you're wrong at all.
Dusty Rhodes, the American Dream, Dusty Rhodes said Norm Connors ripped him off in his book. I believe it was Norm Connors. I believe it was Norm Connors. I think it was IWC out of Pittsburgh. I think that's Norm Connors' group, ain't it?
I think so.
Anyway, Dusty Rhodes said that, you know, a promoter, you know, ripped him off. I'm not the only promoter that you know has ever said, "I'll get you next time, kid." If I tell you I'll get you next time, kid, and I don't get you next time, and you don't want to come back the next time, well, that's fine. You know, if you feel disrespected, don't come back. You know, if you feel like you're not getting nothing, you know, out of something but monetary value out of it, don't come back. You know,
right?
You know, that's very very simple. You know, the fix. You know, I've done. Everything I can, you know, for what I love, and that's
sure.
That's the wrestling business, you know.
Now
people think when somebody doesn't show up, like I'm going, I got these motherfuckers to come, and anybody didn't show up.
That stupid son of a bitch just thought that guy was coming here. You know, I lose sleep over that. You know, when shit like that occurs, you know, when Bill Barrett called and told me AJ Styles had strep throat and wasn't coming to TPI 05, I lost my fucking mind.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I hear that.
And, you know, and then, you know, people still get on me and still get on me that, Ian, you know, owed AJ money. No, I didn't owe AJ money. I made sure the money that was owed to AJ was gotten to him. You know, along with his plane ticket, you know, TNA even said that week that AJ was just getting over a severe case of strep throat.
Right.
You know, I mean, it's like, you know, and there's even conspiracy theories out there that, you know, I had them say it. You know, I don't have that much fucking pull, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, it's just the thought of, you know, if you think that I don't absolutely love the wrestling business with 100% of my heart, you know, and that I've just done this to you know, amass a family fortune, you know, you're completely wrong, you know.
I would agree with that just as a spectator. Now, I only got like a half hour left of recording time, so I do want to get in a few other things.
Go ahead.
What was your favorite show that you ever ran?
Probably I would have to say for the wow factor, you know, 04 TPI.
Okay.
But the funnest show I ever ran was the 03 King of the Death. You know.
Okay.
And you know, the one, you know, that I have to say that is my favorite from the standpoint of emotion, is obviously Quack winning the 06 TPI.
The TPI.
It amazes me. People, like I said, jumping up and down on their chairs, and strangers hugging strangers. You know, like that part in Major League when the Indians win the pennant.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, you know, that is just such an awesome moment.
Yeah. What was your favorite, you know, straight wrestling match that you've booked in your fit?
Probably gonna have to say there. I'm gonna have to give that a tie. I'm gonna have to say.
Just by all means.
I'm gonna have to say. AJ and Matt Sydal, won.
Nice.
Their first match between each other, and Hero and Punk, the 55-minute ladder match.
Okay.
Absolutely one of my favorite things.
Awesome. Favorite death match, and again, if it needs to be a tie or, you know, whatever it needs to be.
No doubt. Hands down. Necro Toby from the 03 King of the Death.
Great, because I didn't want to be the one to say it first, because I was definitely going to be the well, my favorite is when you get Necro, there's like five punches thrown before his name comes out. Like, yeah, it was that was one of the most hard-hitting matches I've ever seen. Another thing I wanted to ask, because, you know, within the selling of your company, all that stuff and everything was put up, was there no interest or contact with the WWE as far as, you know, the buying of the library of IWA Mid-South? Because, I mean, you look at it as it is, and there's a lot of stars that ended up in the WWE that could be contributed to Best of DVDs and things that they make tons of money off of. There was no interest?
Because of the way things have gone with the company, the library actually has come back to me as far as things and stuff is concerned, and some other things are actually being worked upon between Vince Jones, Mike Miller, and myself, but. You know, currently, you know, I kind of feel that the how many times can you make a billionaire a billionaire? You know what I mean?
Right.
It's like,
no, I understand, but they're pretty bloodthirsty guys. I don't think they ever stop. When they're on their fifth Stone Cold DVD, I don't know that they're quite done making money.
No, I'm saying as far as, you know, how many times can I make a billionaire a billionaire? You know what I mean? It's like, you know, I put such a high price
right,
tag on
it. Right, but if it makes
that,
you comfortable.
Right, but I put such a high price tag on it to you know, people that called for it that everybody was like, woo, you know. So I don't know if any of them calls were ever from, you know, WWE or not, you know. When the call came for the Punk DVD, you know, I let Mike Burns, you know, negotiate that deal. You know, I felt it was, you know, the best thing to do. You know, and like I said, you know, Mike can be one of the most brutal assholes that has ever existed. You know, don't ask Mike Burns, you know, for an opinion unless you want to fucking hear it. You know,
right?
And you know, but myself and every indie wrestling fan should be grateful to him for his vision and what he saw, and you know, starting Smart Mark Video. To Glenn and Gary for all the time that they, you know, spent on the road and airplanes and everything, you know, filming shows. And I know it's a business and people make money and, you know, all that stuff, but a lot of dedication there for a little bit of money, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so I just thought, you know, when that came calling, it was best to let, you know, Mike make the deal, you know. You know, it was his opportunity to do with it, you know, what he was going to do with it, you know. You know, it's still, you know, Smart Mark has, you know, all the rights to do with it, you know, what they're going to do with it, and, you know, I still have all the rights to do with it and what I'm going to do with it, but, you know, and on that deal,
right.
You know, we split the money, you know. I just didn't see, what the numbers could be, you know, that of the amount of money that I could get out of Vince in order to sell him that library, you know.
Sure.
I mean, you know, I don't know what Kevin Von Erich got. I don't know what Vern Gagne got, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you know, I think it's just, you know, going to become, you know, more and more guys, you know, too, you know, with Hero and Tyler Black and, you know, them guys going up, and, you know, got you know, a couple Cerro Del Rey matches, you know.
Sure.
So on. So, you know, I mean, maybe someday I'll look for the jackpot, but, you know, for right now, it's, you know, it's a case of, you know, trying to do something with it on my own, you know.
That's understandable, because I just look at, you know, a lot of the stuff you've done is like, it's, if nothing else, it's got to be value to somebody who's finally getting the talent that was, you know, really evolving, you know, no pun intended, within IWA Mid-South.
Yeah, you beat me to that.
Well, you know, as a guy who had, you know, a lot of really good mind and a lot of good vision of younger talent that ended up being bigger things, who would you say are, you know, a few of the future of the indies that are young guys right now?
You know,
just regular wrestling wise.
I really like Kyle O'Reilly. I've only had him on one show. And I'll openly say, you know, there's some shit going on with Davey where, you know, he misses every other show, and, you know, Kyle's booked on it, and, you know, I hope for Kyle's future that Davey realizes, you know, he's got a lot to do with that kid's future and needs to protect him, because unfortunately in the wrestling business, you know, instead of it just becoming fuck Davey, it'll be fuck them guys. And,
right.
You know, and then, you know, promoters just, you know, won't use them, you know, and apparently,
sure.
I heard, you know, Ring of Honor's cutting down on using them, you know, that kid's a real good talent. The stuff I've seen from Adam Cole is a real good, you know, real good kid. I love Jonathan Gresham. I wish he was about, you know, a foot taller, you know. I don't know if he'll ever make it to the next step, but, you know, he should be able to make money on the indies. People should, you know.
Yeah, he's been overseas a lot. It's been a while that way.
Which he returns to the United States on November 6th. A.R. Fox does some absolutely amazing stuff. I think he's the next Pac type a wrestler, you know, that he looks like a wrestler, and he can do some some amazing high flying stuff. You know, I really hope that you know, Matt's foot heals and you know, he gets to get back to the Fed and fulfill what for him should be, you know, a rise to superstardom. Yeah, you know.
Okay.
You know, his foot's really screwed up. He's having to learn to walk again. I mean, this wow. is a kid that hasn't forgotten where he's came from at all. You know, I mean, you know, when WWE comes to town, you know, he, you know, makes sure I get to take my little boy to the show and gets us good tickets and stuff. And, you know, this guy, you know, I feel so sorry for
one of the most crisp high flyers in the business.
Oh, yeah.
Just really, really crisp.
And I feel so sorry for when I see these people taking pot shots at him, pardon the pun, of, you know, I was
yeah.
WWE champion, you know, tag team champion, then I got high. You know, there's the WWE drug testing policy is a joke, you know.
Sure.
They get who they want to get, when they want to get them, you know.
My side is violated, but Ryback is fine.
Right, yeah. You know, the kid's an incredibly humble guy and you know, fantastically fun to watch. And, you know, I really hope he gets to live, you know, up to his abilities of what he could have been, you know,
sure.
someday. Really, and I'm being honest with you here, I really think that if it was done right, that Masada could be a huge star. Because the guy looks like the guy.
He could do a lot.
That walks into a bar, you know, and kicks somebody's ass. You know, in this day and age.
He's got psychology,
you know,
about him, too.
Right, he, but I'm saying he also looks the role, you know, of a guy, you know, would Dick Murdoch even have a job nowadays, you know, in wrestling, you know, what happened to the guy that, you know, is that barroom brawler, you know, and Masada's that guy and more, you know, he can wrestle, you know, he can do your big spots. You know,
mm-hmm.
and on top of that, you know, he looks like a guy that you know can stump somebody's face in, you know,
yeah.
and you know, especially, and I go back to this point, but especially in this age of the craze over, you know, the bikers and all that shit, you know, you put Masada in some kind
anarchy.
Of gimmick like that, you know, in the WWE. And he's a believable, viable force, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You have no problem, you know, telling the world that Tenzai went to Japan, and you know, Prince Albert went to Japan, became Tenzai, you know, and is back now as this killer force. You know, you can tell the world, you know, this guy's a Japan star. You know, he's all scarred up. You know. So on and so on. It can be such an interesting story with that creative team, you know, of who this guy is.
On the side, yeah.
You know, I mean, I really do think that guy's got the all around talent, you know, to be somebody. You know,
I'd agree with that.
Yeah, you know, especially if you know you put him with, you know, a smooth talker, you know. You know, you put him with a Paul Heyman type manager. You know?
Oh yeah, like that's a crusher.
You know,
that's with CM Punk and Paul. That'd be unbelievable.
Because Punk don't need a talker, you know.
No, he needs a crusher.
Right.
Yeah. Deathmatch wise, who's you know, who's out there right now that's going to make this, you know, the deathmatch thing look good? Because obviously there's a lot of people who could just do it. Could they make
who
it look good?
Know,
and
you know, and I know this is probably going to make you either happy or really sad. I'm really, really pulling for Rory Mondo to come back from Japan in 2 and 3 months, and have learned a lot, and just be an exceptional hand. You know, there's not a whole lot of fresh guys on the deathmatch scene. You know,
no, that's why I didn't search for answers on this one.
You know, I feel sorry for Chuy Martinez because he lives in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
He's another kid, you know, with fucking, you know, big balls, the Vince McMahon grapefruits,
mm-hmm.
you know, but he lives in Texas, you know, and it's just a dead end road there, you know, and he's got a family and stuff, and just, you know, there ain't nothing he can do about it, you know. Tremont, of course, is the pinnacle of the guys out there now, you know.
Yeah. Sure is.
Without a doubt, you know, if he would dedicate himself to it fully, you know, Simon Says is you know, got deathmatch breakout star all over him. Plus,
sure.
He can work. You know, so it's you know, I have. A bunch of guys from the East Coast, and please don't ask me their names, you know, sending me things, you know, oh, I want to do this, I want to do that, you know, so,
right.
I mean, you know, eventually when we find the right building, you know, we're going to put together, you know, a tournament, and we're going to find out what they got, you know,
sure.
You know, because, you know, the honesty of it is, you know, hey kid, I don't know you from fucking Adam, you know, but if you want to drive fucking 20 hours, you know, to come out here and you know, show me what you got, you're more than welcome to.
Mm-hmm.
There's this other kid named Mosh Pit Mike, out of New Mexico, Colorado area, I've seen some pretty good stuff out of him with working
mm-hmm.
Pondo. They got a little deathmatch group out there.
Cool.
You know, no matter what me and Pondo have always been through, when he tells me about, you know, somebody, I've always taken him for his word for it. You know.
Right.
And then I saw some stuff on that guy and, you know, he's legit. So you know, there's a few out there, you know, Chuy Martinez, you know, is you know, the big one that I feel sorry for, though, because, you know, Texas is the fucking black
just
hole
in a bad spot.
You know, of wrestling, you know, especially all the way down in San Antonio, down by, you know, Mexico border, you know.
Right.
And stuff. It's so expensive to fly out of, you know, and so far away. Fuck, you got to travel 12 hours before you're out of the state of Texas.
Damn. That's crazy stuff. Well, man, I don't want us to get cut off by the air or anything like that. So I do want to give you, you know, opportunity to, you know, give your plugs and all of that stuff. You know, anything you want to plug it's all you.
Man, I just say, you know, support independent wrestling. You know, we're the ones that need your love. We're the ones that need your support. You know, if a dude's your favorite wrestler and he puts out a T-shirt, you know, get that T-shirt from him. You know, they ain't making a bunch of money and putting themselves through hell. And, you know, personally, I'd like to thank you for, you know, after my last experience of giving me a very professional interview, Jay, I greatly appreciate it. Trust me, I was beyond not doing any more of these things ever again. And, you know, between my girlfriend and the boys told me that you were a pretty all right guy. You know, I decided to go for it. You know,
I thank you for the opportunity because, again, I do respect the things you've done. Again, you don't owe me a dime, so how mad can I be?
Son of a bitch, I found the one person I don't owe a dime to. Wow, that's awesome. But yeah, man, you take care, you know, keep doing what you do for independent wrestling, you know, that's very important, you know, and, you know, hopefully we'll see, hopefully we'll see maybe Sabian blow up, you know, Black Jesus, whatever his name is this week.
Jesus.
That would be fun, you know, for things, you know.
I had Joker on last week. I don't know if you know heard about that or anything like that. He had just announced his retirement, and he definitely put you over as he missed a show that you had booked him, and I think it was like one day low key and another day Roderick, I want to say. And he's like, man, I'm really sorry I missed that booking because, you know, I had stuff doing. But he's like, that would have been something I really, really would have enjoyed. And, you know, he definitely put you over as another one of the guys that really had nothing bad to say about you. So.
Who was this?
Joker.
Oh, Joker. Yeah, I love him. I absolutely love that dude. That's why I wish he lived in, you know, Indiana instead of Pennsylvania.
he had nothing to say good about DJ last week, but he definitely had a few nice words to say about you and how you definitely booked him in good situations.
Yeah, I did everything I could for him. He was guys get disgruntled. You know, hopefully he'll come back.
I hope so too. We love him as a fan.
The independent wrestling business is hard on the psyche, man. It's really hard on the psyche.
Sure.
But once again, man, thanks for giving me an opportunity to speak my mind without shitting on me and being fair with me. I greatly appreciate it. And
absolutely,
you know,
man. You're welcome anytime. And again, just hit me up, and it's definitely open to you anytime. Like I said, I know what needed to happen. As far as this, I've seen the shitstorm that happened last time, so it comes down to it. Close the lines, really don't, you know, let a lot of people know beforehand because they're just going to fucking hit me up until it happens. So, you know, it is what it is, man. But hit me up anytime, and I really appreciate you coming on.
Like I said, man, make sure you guys, you know, support Smart Mark Video. They've lowered a lot of DVD prices and, indie wrestling being deep shit if it wasn't for Smart Mark. You know, Mike is what he is, you know, as far as, you know, the type A personality is, but there is no more honest person in the wrestling business. You're not gonna find a more straight up guy than Mike Burns in the wrestling business, and you're doing yourself and the indie wrestling business a service by supporting his company. So take it easy, man.
All right, man. You too.
I'll talk to you. Take care.
Yep.
Bye.
Night. So there you have it, guys. About to close out the show. That was the one and only Ian Rotten. Almost 4 hours of content. I did what I planned on doing, which was conduct a professional interview. And to have a good conversation with a guy who has done a lot for the independent wrestling business. Now, of course, you're gonna get a bunch of people that are gonna tell me, "Well, he's fucked me." Well, guess what? He didn't fuck me, and I don't know what else to tell you guys. But I thought that was great. I had a great time with it. A lot of great stories. A lot of good talk. A lot of insight on things that have happened. And guys that are on the top of the business right now. So, I mean, if you didn't enjoy it, whatever, don't listen to it. But otherwise, like I said, I want to thank Ian. That was great stuff. For those who used to my normal banter, guess what? I'm doing another show tomorrow. You'll hear my football banter. You'll hear my CCW, my WWE, I have stuff to talk about PWS. I have a whole handful of topics to talk about tomorrow. So that's what I'm going to do tomorrow. I'm thinking like 9 p.m. type stuff, just like tonight, but only shorter because I'm not doing 4 hours tomorrow night. So yeah, check me out again tomorrow night. I'll give you a quick rundown. Wrestling Soup. Women Love Wrestling, Stern Nation, Sports Den. What else? Two Moms, One Show. Yeah, just I'll give more formal plugs tomorrow night because I'm going to be doing this again. So that's what it is. Again, got to thank Ian for coming on, everybody who enjoyed this. And, man, I got to update you on some news on what we did last week. And I mean we, because I can't do this shit by myself. I'm only one, and the numbers were ridiculous. So I'll hit y'all up tomorrow on everything that's going on. Peace.
But you go to the back, and you tell your boss that there's a new Yakuza in town. That's Yakuza Kick Radio, and we're taking over.